Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. And welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, David Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Well, let's get down to it, man. Let's talk about the fight that everybody's been talking about this past week, the fight everybody was all hyped up about and everybody's been waiting for, and it didn't sell us short. We end up getting the fix that we all been waiting for. Sergio Mora versus... No, I'm just playing. No. If you want to be put asleep, you watch Sergio Mora. But James Curlin versus Alfredo Angulo. Man, oh man. No disappointment there. You know, been saying it all along, that fight should have been on a pay-per-view because you would have walked away perfectly fine spending that hard work, earned money that us blue-collar fight fans work hard for to dish out to these promoters and to these fighters. Angulo, Curlin, the first round was phenomenal. It was one to rewind, watch it again over and over. It was one to show the guy that just showed up to watch the telecast that who talks about MMA taking over the sport to kind of gloat on him and say, see, this is boxing. This is why we tune in to watch the sport. This is why everybody in the whole world stops and pauses and what they're going to do next when they see two guys get in the ring and leave it in the ring with two fisticks and just pure violence. At the same time, with a lot of science behind it, you cannot get your eyes off of the TV, or if you're there ringside, get your eyes out of the ringside, man, because it was one of those fights. It was phenomenal. Gabriel?
Yeah, it's been such a busy day, Dave. I had movers in and out of my house. They had to replace my oven because I'd just been making crow for people, like, nonstop. It's just been unbelievable. Baked crow, fricasseed crow. It's just been, you know, I think I'm opening a restaurant. What a fight, you know. Beyond getting a chance to gloat about, you know, being right, because I'll be totally honest, I was not, and I said it on the show, I was not, you know, dead solid, you know, firm on that pick.
Right.
I was a lot of things that were happening that I felt, you know, Gerald Hudson not being in Angulo's camp, I thought was huge. That he was starting a whole new camp. You know, I'm a big believer in Nacho Beristain, but you don't make changes like that to a whole new way of thinking right before you face a guy like James Kirkland, who was in his third fight. And I was surprised talking to a few writers, talking to a few fight people. Every time I would bring up the fight, they would say, yeah, but, you know, Kirkland looked like crap in his last fight.
Right.
So what are you talking about? He knocked the guy out. And they're like, no, the Ishida fight. Like, yeah, that was two fights ago. That was back in April. He's had two fights with Ann Wolf, and this is his first real full training camp with her. I don't know what you're talking about. And that kind of made people change their minds. To me, you know, this was – I feel two different ways about the fight. On one hand, it was everything that we need in boxing. Like, every week we need brilliant fights like this, shows of courage, two guys willing to risk their mm-hmm. status in the sport against each other. At the same time, you do kind of go, what would have happened if Golden Boy had built this fight up, put them on cards together, you know, I think Mexico would love James Kirkland. They certainly, as you'll hear in the interview with Ann Wolf, they certainly opened their hearts to them after the fight.
Right.
But if you would have built to this moment, and like you said, put it on pay-per-view or put it on HBO World Championship Boxing, where they were fighting for more money, fighting for a title, these guys deserve the kind of accolades that are reserved for pay-per-view fights that are crappy, where mm-hmm. we know exactly who's going to win. Like this weekend, you know, everybody's hyped about Manny Pacquiao and Marquez, but we all know who's going to win. That's not exciting. This fight was so great because, you know, I made my pick, and I'm
let's take that back,
guy as there is.
Let's take that back, though, because a lot of people really thought that Angulo was just going to mow over Kirkland. You know what I mean? He was literally written off the boxing scene, because of that Ishida win. I mean, there was a lot of folks saying easy win for Angulo. It's not going to go past one or two. And for a minute, some folks were absolutely right. When that right hand that Angulo, first off, he was being backed up. This is the thing that I had said. Angulo has one of those really kind of understood power. You know, he doesn't look like he's throwing a big power punch because he's so slow, but he's got so much behind it. Curtin's coming forward. Curtin's putting that pressure. Curtin looks like the Mexican in Mexico. But here comes Angulo's right hand, and it just lands clean, short, crisp, and drops Angulo. So you know for a fact a lot of the fans that were voting and rooting for Angulo were going, you see, I told you. The thing, though, that was just that made that round so special, the thing that made that round where you just stood up and you kind of held your breath for a moment because you didn't know what was going to happen next. For one thing, I was hoping that Mexico referee, you know, being in Mexico, the referee wouldn't stop the round too early. You know, would allow Curtin to kind of roll back into the bout, and he did. And that was the great part of it, where you saw Curtin just fight back hurt. And he was clearly dazed. He was out on his feet. He was on the ropes. But he fought his way back into that round, and it was just phenomenal. And that's when I go, okay, now we got the fight that we've all been talking about. Now we're going to find out exactly where is Curtin at in his career and where is Angulo at in his career. No matter what, I don't take nothing away from either. I tell you what, I'm eating crow because I picked Angulo. But I told you, don't write Curtin off. But I'm happy to eat that crow because, man, it was worth every little bit of piece of crow to put on my plate, man.
Dude, yeah, it was one of those fights that was just – and I keep, it's almost like going viral, you know, everywhere I go, people want to know where they can get the fight, how can they see the fight, you know,
right.
I'm like, you know, watch HBO, it's, you know, being played, I guess, all through the week. I'm not sure if they put it on demand yet, but I know that first round, like, there was one site that put the whole fight up, and I think by, like, Tuesday, it had, like, 15,000 hits already. Like, people were just... It's one of those things, you know, Kirkland's style and what, how it meshed with Angulo's is, and that display of heart and chin that Angulo had, that is universal. And I'm sorry, but anybody that tells me UFC is more exciting, no one can touch boxing. Because if that guy had been dropped, and I think you brought this up to me, if this was the UFC and Kirkland had gotten dropped and had gotten jumped on like that, they would have waved the fight off. He might have even had it waved off when he hit the ground.
Right.
You know, he might have got hammer-fisted as soon as he hit the canvas and elbowed to the face, and the fight was over. Only in boxing can a guy get dropped that hard, get up, and fight his way through that next minute and 10 seconds and come back to knock the other guy down. I don't ever really see that in the UFC. I'm sorry, but we are still the best combat sport in the world. Because of guys and fights like this. You just don't see it. Castillo Corrales won.
Yeah.
We could go on and on. To me, it's, you know, I know a lot of people are like, wow, you're just so high on Kirkland and it wasn't a good win. And after the fact, they want to shoot down, you know, Angulo punched himself out. But here's the thing about the punch yourself out. In order to punch yourself out, you have to miss. No one ever punches himself out landing. And
right.
Kirkland, at that close range, was able to make him miss. I mean, he was taking body shots, but for the majority of the fight, he didn't really take one or two, you know, he didn't take two hard shots in a row ever again. He took that flush hand, and it was like, it's kind of like Trinidad's chin. You put him down, he gets up, you think it's going to be easy, and really it was just a wake-up call for him. And then
Absolutely.
All of a sudden, you know, you're in deep water, and you're like, wait a minute, what's going on? And then you got the hell beat out of you.
Right.
It's just... I don't see how you wouldn't want to see another Kirkland fight. I think it was funny that there was not even people just picking against him, but saying, why is he on HBO again? He's a bum. He's this and that. You know, I mean, people really shot him down. And I thought it was just not knowing the facts, you know.
Exactly.
Like Ann Wolf said, he's undefeated at 154, and he's undefeated when Ann Wolf's in the corner. And until that changes, you know, I think he's going to be a problem for everybody in that division. And what's more, now we've got a guy, I mean, 154 has some good people in it. It still does. But there wasn't
oh,
that
yeah.
guy that everybody can look to and go, I need to fight him in order to become, you know, something real in this division. Other guys are doing impressive things. Austin Trout going to Mexico and getting his title, and he's now finally getting on TV. But, you know, and then you got Canelo, who's a big star, but he's yet to face, you know, a threat or somebody that can punch, who's a 254-pounder. I don't even really consider, you know, Cintron is kind of more of a welterweight. He's kind of like Martinez. He can fight at 154, but at welterweight is really where he lives and has been most effective, even with that win over Angulo at 154. So to me, the division is now completely changed, and you've got a guy that everybody can point to and go, there's the threat. And if Golden Boy does it right and promotes him well, he could be the guy that everybody's gunning for. I mean, I think Canelo will always be probably a bigger draw, but at the same time, I mean, can you think of a fighter, and even, you know, look at the, I hate to get all racial, but look at the African-American fighters in the sport. Is there one that's more exciting? I mean, Floyd's flamboyant. He talks a lot.
Right.
Yeah, the knockout over Ortiz. But pure excitement, you don't know what's going to happen. Is he going to get knocked out? Is he going to knock the other guy out? I don't think there's anybody more exciting than James Kirkland. I just don't. And if they market that right, with his backstory and with Ann Wolf next to him, I've got, you know, a lot of women telling me, wow, I love the fact that he's got a female trainer. It makes him even more exciting and more interesting. I don't see how they can't turn this guy into a star. You would have to really screw up, in my opinion, in order for that
to happen. The thing is, the screw up would be, is do they really want to think out the box? I mean, go back into the 80s. I mean, that's where the American boxing fan fell off. They didn't have anybody to really identify, somebody that was going to kind of take it back to the steel mill, the way Marvelous Marvin Hagler did and Thomas the Hitman Hearns, you know, workmen-like fighters, guys that kind of almost fought for a purpose and for a reason, guys that fought for a struggle and that represented a group of people that were in the coal mines, in the steel mills, in the car shops, in the chop shops and stuff like that. Kirkland could capture that imagination. Kirkland can bring back that kind of significance to an American who can identify with them and go, okay, I'm back to the sport, you know. Whether or not it's 154 or 160, I think you're absolutely right. But it's all left to the promoter. Do they want to play it safe? Do they want to try to venture and put money into trying to get this man's face back on, get this man's face to represent the American boxing billboard? That's what it leads down to, and that's what it's going to have to come down to. We got a lot of calls today. We got a great show for everybody. I'm hoping it's going to be a great show. It really depends on how everything kind of rolls out here. But we got Ann Wolf. We got Ann Wolf on later on today. We got Alfredo Angulo that's going to be calling in, talking to us about his experience with James Kirkland. We got James Kirkland calling in to talk about his win over Alfredo Angulo. And then we got Manny Rubios, the head trainer for the L.A. Matadors, going to be calling in, talking to us about their comeback on Sunday. But hey, let's do we have enough time here, Gabe, to patch in a fight fan?
Yeah, we got a couple minutes, and I got to call Manny.
Okay, you know what? We're going to patch in one of our good friends, man, that put some money down and said, you know what? He better win because other than that, I'm going to be broke. D, what's up, brother? You're on live right now. I'm leaving in the ring. Tell us how much you made, baby. Come on, D. Are you that stacked up with bills right now you can't talk?
Woo! Hey!
Hey!
baby. I was talking.
How much are you talking, man? How much are you rolling with?
somebody, I guess, you know, sore loser and a phony. So I didn't get he's actually a regular on another show. But I could call him out like that, but you know, you got busters like that, man, on a regular, I guess, you know, sore loser.
Do we have to send the leaving the ring soldiers over there, man? You know. Break some legs and arms and stuff to get that money.
right. Man, shoot. It was fun these last couple of days, man. Showing up to my mailbox, man, getting these money orders, man. That was on time. And actually in prison, made a little bit, too. So, I mean, it was, man, hey, when he went down, man, I was saying, get up, James. You got to get up, man. Don't go out like this. I thought I was about to see a replay of that fucking Ishida shit, man. And
right.
He got up, man, and there was no stagger whatsoever, man. And he looked like he was focused.
Oh,
and,
man.
Who knows? That might have been in the cards, man, because, you know, let him go ahead and see if he's going to blow his load, which he did. And Kirkland capitalized on his ass, man. It was fun to watch.
You know, when he got back up, let's talk about that look on his face. Because when he got dropped, there was really no expression. There was, like, really no telling that. I don't even think he knew he got dropped. Because he got back up, and it was almost like his mind was fighting with his legs. Like, he was actually arguing with himself. Like, no, you can't be hurt. You know, there's no way you can be hurt. You could see him literally kind of fight through that moment. You know, he was collective, but at the same time, he was really fighting through that moment of not getting dropped again, because Angulo jumped all over him as soon as the ref allowed him to continue to start trading gloves.
Yeah. Oh. I mean the way it happened, it looked more like a flash to me. I mean, he was slightly probably buzzed a little bit, but he got up so quick and wasn't staggering at all, you know.
No.
He gets hit off a lot, and I don't like that game. That right hand is stinging his ass, man.
They got to do something about that. Fight, you know, with that right hand. I think it's always going to be his Achilles heel. And I think it's also because of the way he, like, when he comes in close, he tends to move his upper body. But when he goes at range, he tries to pick it off with his hand, and he misses a lot, you know, and he gets caught with that right hand. But I think it's also just the nature of the way he fights. He's going to get hit, you know. He's going to be right there. He's going to be pushing you to do stuff. But I think until it's a guy, and somebody was saying, you know, somebody's going to get him that's more technically skilled, like a Canelo or somebody. And one, I'm like, come on, you know, Canelo hasn't fought anybody. Hasn't fought anybody at all.
He's been pushed back by smaller men. That's the thing that cracks me up when I hear people say that. I had a guy, you know, literally telling me Canelo will outbox Kirtland. And I'm like, dude, he had problems with Miguel Cotto's younger brother. He had problems with Manhattan, with Matthew Hatton. He had problems with Gomez with the pressure. You put pressure on him, he backs up. He traps himself against the ropes. He can't do that with James Kirtland. And I've yet to see him really kind of use his legs a little bit more. I've always said it. I think Canelo is a natural 147, or, you know, but his legs don't allow him to make that weight at 147. They're too thick and too big, so he had to move up to 154.
I think, you know, really, the guy that gets Kirkland is going to be like a Trinidad was. It's going to have to be a Hopkins type, who's a big dude for his weight class. You know, Hopkins was 6'1". And 160, that's old school with a good chin and knows how to slow the pace and use his jab and use those fundamentals, but in a nasty kind of way. I don't see anybody like that at 154. You know, I don't think Sergey Zangara could keep him off. Austin Trout is a guy that's very fundamental, and I want to see him challenged a little more to know what he's like. But I just think that the kind of pressure that James puts on, it's not Mexican pressure. It's a different kind of pressure. It's a high volume, high intensity. I'm going to go to 11 right off the bat. We're going to go to the deep end of the fight where we're throwing as hard as we can, and it's like playing chicken. I'm going to see if you can keep up with this, which one of us is going to get hit by the train first. And James so far is able to, you know, besides Ishida, has been able to ask that question of people like, you know, Julio and now Angulo, and their answers have come up short. It's an interesting style. I'm curious about the guy that makes it to round 8, round 9, and 10. And I think we talked about this last week. Yeah. I mentioned it that Aussie Duran fight that Kirkland went through, I think jumps up in stocks considering what he was able to do against Gonzalez.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Kirkland was able to handle him, and people go, it was just Aussie Duran. But it's not always who you're facing, it's how you handle them. And he handled that. It had to box and had to go late in that fight. I just think that there's a lot more skill there. I think people equate James's shaky chin early in rounds, and it's really been the first round, with bad defense overall. And I don't agree. I think his defense is actually pretty good.
Right. But you know what? To me, Kirtland, I'm going to definitely give him the credit of what happened. But at the same time, to me, he reminds me of almost like a suicide bomber. You know, he's a guy that's just going to go for it. You know, he doesn't care whether or not. Anybody that beats him is just going to have to be strong enough to make sure he puts him down. Somebody that's got a good jab. Somebody that's stronger, a little bit bigger and thicker that can back him up and hold him off. Not necessarily outbox him, but at the same time, you're right, going to have to outbox him a little bit. But that's the thing I like about Kirtland. I think at any given Saturday, he could get dropped and not get back up, but it's still going to be left with excitement. It's still going to have that extra oomph where you're going to go, you know what, I don't give a shit if he lost. I want to watch him again. The same thing with Angulo. I got to give it to Angulo, too. He took a hellacious beating. After that first round, to me, never recovered. To me, he just couldn't figure out how fast and how strong Kirtland was.
What got me tripping on some of these posts, fellas, they talking about, Martinez, a manhandler. We ain't talking about no damn Martinez. give that fucking boy another year and a half with about three more opponents. I bet you if that fight happens, he's going to get to Martinez's ass. That's a fight I'm looking forward down the road.
Martinez,
I
want to
see that fight right there. Martinez is still on top when it happens, within the next three or four fights. I bet you Martinez won't leave them damn hands down like that.
Oh, I know. I know. And I tell you what, D, I was even telling Gabe here, I said, if Martinez's camp and himself, Martinez, have been looking for a nemesis, they certainly have found one. As long as Kirtland continues to win and it continues to look like a beast in that ring, we have a pretty good sizable pay-per-view fight there in the makings. Ann Wolf had some great things to say about Martinez. So as soon as we play that replay of the interview, you're going to have she answers a lot of questions. D, I'm going to put you on hold, brother.
Oh, yeah. I'm
all
right,
right
here,
man.
I love
D, enjoy the moment, sir. You were right all along. Enjoy the moment and spend the money.
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
Spend it wise, my friend. Spend it wise. You take care.
Yep.
That's good to hear, man. You know, D's been a long-time listener, called into the show, and good to hear that he got his money worth. He got it back. He put it on there. He put his, you know, he was like, "Yo, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna ride with you, Gabe." And guess what? It paid off. I should have made that pick with you too, Gabe. But I was like, "Nah, I'm not. I'm gonna go against it." You know. All right. Well, anyways, if you want to call in, you sure can. 347-215-7598. I'll say it again. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. You speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Gabriel Montoya. And I believe we're back with the Gabriel Montoya with our first guest, right, Gabe?
Yes, we are. I'm here with Manny Robles, who's the head coach or head trainer, I'm not sure how you put it, since it's a team, of the Los Angeles Matadors, who are coming back, basically taking on the world as they've reconfigured the WSB, the World Series of Boxing. And so it's kind of Los Angeles against the world. And here he is to talk to us about that. Welcome to the show, Manny. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you for having me, guys.
Hey Manny. It's good to hear from you, too, man.
Likewise. It's a real pleasure to be with you guys.
Manny, let's start off. You know, I don't know if a lot of fight fans know you. You're kind of a burgeoning, you know, rising trainer in the sport of boxing. You know, people are familiar with your work at Maywood and that. But why don't you just start talking? Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got to this point, and who you've worked with, and all that.
Sure. Well, I've been involved in boxing for pretty much all my life, as a boxer myself, and now as a coach. You know, I'm from the LA area. I used to work for my dad. My dad was a well-known coach back in the day. His name is Manuel Robles. They used to call him Chato. So I worked with I used to work alongside with my father. He worked with the Israel Vasquez, Martin Castillo, Reggie Johnson, Enrique Sanchez, Hector Quiroz, among others. And I pretty much developed my training technique through working with alongside with my dad and I was blessed with the knowledge and the gift that my dad passed on to me to be able to, you know, work with pros at the same time and, you know, pretty much grew in my way into the professional ranks, obviously working alongside with the amateurs and it's been a process where, you know, here I am today. I got the opportunity. I got the call one day, you know, if I was interested in coaching the LA Matadors, and they presented the project to me, the WSB, working alongside with Aiva, and I was like, hey, this is something that not could benefit all of, not just me myself particularly as a trainer, but you know, the boxers out there, you know, U.S. boxers, amateur boxers, internet at an internet local level and at an international level. So here we are today.
What makes it different for you? I mean, when it comes in training a team and making them become a team and making sure that all the weaknesses are worked on and, you know, correct what happened from the last season, you know, knowing who you guys are up against, knowing exactly the feel of what was the unknown. Now you got that feel. You got your guys' feet wet. What would you say now this time around for the Matadors? It's going to be a little bit different.
Well, definitely. I mean, just considering that last year was new to all of us. I mean, in the world of boxing, the WSB was just, you know, we're all getting pretty much our feet wet and learning the system as we went. And now this being the second season, I feel that, we know what we're up against. So we have a better team. We were able to make some changes in the team and bring in some new guys. And knowing that, this time around, it wasn't just the America's Conference. Now we're out there to face the world. And it's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy. You know, there's a lot of good quality boxers out there, you know, from all over the world. So I'm trying to get these guys, you know, the guys that were part of the team last year and then the newer guys that just came in to understand what we're up against and use my boxers that were part of the team last year to talk to the new guys and let them know that, hey, you know, this thing, it's not going to be easy. It's going to get pretty competitive. Right now we're having a blast. It's a lot of smiles and, you know, we're all having a good time and, you know, working hard, but who knows what will be 4 or 5 months from now, you know. My thing is for them to keep that same state of mind, try to keep them as focused and as loose as possible now and then, where we're going to be, this is a team aspect of boxing. It isn't just it's still an individual sport, but we're working together as a team. It's kind of like we have five matches per show, and if we win 3 out of the 5 matches, we get 3 points, and the other team gets 1 point. If we win 4 or more, then we get 3 points, and the other team doesn't get any points. So it's a lot of fun. It's competitive. It's I'm telling you, the fights are great because, I mean, all of these guys are top amateurs, local here in the United States, worldwide amateurs. I mean, they have a lot of international experience. Rashid Warren, for example, right now, Williams. So it's pretty competitive. This isn't, you know, every fight is competitive. It's just amazing fight, high level of competition and boxing skills overall. So, you know, it's going to be fun.
What's the thing that you learned the most, or these fighters learned the most in fighting, essentially a pro season last year, a ton of fights against top guys? What have you noticed in terms of, I guess, coming into this season, in terms of preparation and what to expect that these guys have learned and carried over into this season?
The transition. Being able to make the transition from amateur to pro is probably the what's been the most difficult aspect, but at the same time, we've been pretty successful to getting these guys to understand that it's no longer a 3-round fight. It's a 5-round fight now, no headgear, 8-ounce gloves, you know, in some cases 10-ounce gloves. So, you know, just the transition, being able to understand that there's nothing semi-pro about this. It's just like the pros, you know. And so, you know, once again, it's the transition that we've been able to accomplish.
So that's a lot of minutes that you've added too, right? That's 7 minutes of fighting that they have to do that they didn't have to do before, right? Going from
Absolutely.
2 minute rounds, 4 rounds, 2 minutes. Now it's you know, now it's five rounds, 3 minutes, and that's
yes, sir.
That's a huge yes. difference to these guys.
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah, that's almost double, right?
I mean, yeah, it usually takes both guys six pro fights before they go from a four-rounder up to a six-rounder, and these guys jump right
correct.
To the deep end.
Exactly, absolutely. So, you know, what one thing I must say is that I'm proud of my team because they're very dedicated. They're focused and they're hard workers, and they understand. They understand what's at stake. They understand that what they've been brought in for, and it's just exciting. It's fun to you know. I mean, we're representing the LA team, the LA Matadors. We're representing the United States throughout the world.
Right.
And so it's exciting. It's something that we're all looking forward to, and hopefully we won't let you people out there, the fans, real boxing fans. Hopefully we won't let you down, and we'll give you what you're looking for, which are exciting fights.
Now, when we talk about having no headgear, are the gloves not? I mean, because I've heard that the gloves were specially made to make sure you know
correct.
That you know that there was a little bit more to protect them because of the fact they're not having headgear and there are five-minute rounds.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. The gloves are different. They're well compact. I mean, they're still 8-ounce gloves, mind
mm-hmm.
you. But they are different. They're more, I guess, it's a different type of glove. Kind of like, it's way different than when you wear a Reyes glove. You know, it's more like a winning glove. You know what I mean? It's more. It's out there more to protect the hand, protect the boxers. It's not a puncher's glove, in other words. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. Yeah, that's
so
what I mean. Because you didn't see a whole lot of cuts or knockouts. I mean.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was kind of minimalized, but and I think that made the fights a little bit exciting, but at the same time, I know folks sat back and go, why are these guys not cutting or why are they not being knocked out by these plus punches? And I think it was the talent of those gloves.
Well, that and the fact that these guys, I mean, these are even fights. You know,
right.
there's no lopsided fights here. These are all even evenly matched fights. Where it's hard to get a knockout against a high-caliber opponent, you know what I mean? Nobody's going
right.
to want to go out. I mean, these aren't, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but these aren't punching bags, you know? I
right.
mean, these aren't fights where, like, hey, you know, this guy, you're going to come in, you're going to knock him out in the first round to build your record. There's no such thing. Not in this league. In this league, you know, they're highly competitive fights, and they're evenly matched. You know, you can have an Olympian versus another Olympian, and you know, what are the odds of getting a knockout there? You know what I mean? When both guys are high caliber boxers and they're very well trained and in good shape. Nobody wants to go out on that type of note. So
right.
you know, it's competitive.
Speaking of knockouts, you've got the guy that had the most knockouts in the World Series of Boxing league period, right? And Eric Fowler.
Eric Fowler, yes.
He
yes.
did what? Three knockouts last year?
Three knockouts.
Considering the competition, that's actually pretty high. He only fought
yes,
a few
sir.
Times.
Yes, sir, absolutely.
How's he doing coming into this season? I know he was a little dinged up, and some of the guys, I think that was probably the problem, was they weren't used to fighting this often in this kind of style. And I know some guys took some injuries, some guys took some cuts. How's Eric doing coming into the season?
He's doing fine. As a matter of fact, he'll be opening up the show for us on Sunday night. So we're looking forward to that. He's well prepared. He got a lot of rest on the off season. He wasn't, you know, he didn't compete at any of the amateur competitions that were out there. He just decided to sit back and get the rest. And he's ready. He's ready to go. He's excited. He's excited about, you know, opening up the stage for us on Sunday night. So he's good to go. Physically, mentally, I believe he's a better fighter now. He's more composed. He understands that it's not an amateur fight. He's got to understand the knockouts always come on their own and be able to go through the process and to maintain the same level of fight from beginning to end. And,
right.
and understand that it's a hit and not get hit game, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and he's kind of a go-for-broke guy. I think that's why I like watching him. So he just goes out and either you're going to get me or I'm going to get you.
All right.
He really believes in his power. But that's good to know that he's settled down. The other guy I'm curious about is...
Pearson was fun to watch, too.
Which one?
Chris Pearson, I believe. He was really fun. Saw Sweepy.
Yeah, he was. Unfortunately, he's not going to be with the team this year.
Right,
He's a pro. But, yeah, he was another exciting guy. I mean, but the guy I really thought really grew throughout the year, and I watched his very first fight to the last fight, was the now three-time Olympian, which is the first in U.S. Boxing history, or U.S. Olympic boxing history, is Rasheed Warren, your bantamweight. Talk a little bit about his development and what you see for him coming into this season.
Well, Rasheed Warren, he's an amazing boxer. I mean, I've had the privilege and the honor to work alongside with Rasheed with the WSB and alongside him with the U.S. national team. I worked with him. We just got back from the World Championships. I was one of the assistant coaches for the U.S. national team as well. And Rasheed just came home with the bronze medal from the World Championships. And that's an amazing accomplishment. He's such an amazing athlete all around. He's a leader to the team. He's an extremely hard worker, dedicated, focused. I'm so proud of the kid. And he's not done, believe me. He's out there to he's out there to win. He's out there to he came back to the Matadors. He's more than, you know, it was just an honor for me when I found out that he decided to come back to the Matadors. I was so happy because that's my leader. Outside of just being a great boxer, he's a true leader, and he just brings a lot of knowledge to the team, I would definitely, he's looking forward to the Olympic Games now that he's qualified, and I wouldn't be surprised if he comes home with the gold medal. He's on a mission.
Yeah, absolutely. Manny, let's talk about some of the new names that have entered onto the Matador teams. I mean, can you talk to us a little bit about the guys that we haven't had a chance yet to see?
Absolutely. We just acquired Edwin Sandoval, good kid out of the Bakersfield area, good little bantamweight that I had the pleasure of working with a couple times in the past. And he's been pretty successful in the amateurs. You know, he participated in the Junior World Championships in 2000, I believe it was 2008 in Azerbaijan, and he was at the Last Chance tournament at the Olympic Trials, and he's a good kid, and I decided to go hit him and give him, I saw something in this kid that I said, hey, you know what, this kid, he's good, he would actually fit the profile of fighting in the WSB. Not every boxer is cut out for this league. So he's one of them. And we acquired Raynell Williams, 2008 Olympian. He was with the Memphis Force last season. And so this year I said, hey, you know, I want this kid on my team. I saw him last year and I said, man, I wouldn't mind having Raynell Williams on my team. And here we are with Raynell. We have a kid out of the Ukraine. His name is Leonid Malkov, a lightweight. Great, over 200 and odd amateur fights, and as far as in the amateurs, great kid. He's a new asset to the team. We have Jason Quigley from Ireland, mm-hmm. kid that's going to be joining the team. We have Siju Chavaz from the U.S. We have Michael Haid from another Irish kid, and we got a couple of other boxers. We got a light heavyweight out of Belarus. We got a couple of kids out of Georgia, and I'm not talking about the state of Georgia. I'm talking about the country Georgia, out there in Eastern Europe. So you know, we're looking forward to a good season. I mean, we got a lot of talent, packed out. American boxers, international, foreign boxers. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
I understand you guys also have new additions to the Matador Knockouts. I'm pretty excited about that myself.
I know, I heard about that.
Me too. Unfortunately, I haven't had the chance to meet any of them, but I've heard a lot of good things about them girls as well. So I'm looking forward to that too.
I'm excited, man. It's going to be a fun season. And you know, I think the biggest thing for you guys, besides just getting all this new talent on your team, both on the Knockouts and on the actual Matadors, is that you guys are going to be on Fox Sports West. and you're going to be in prime time on Tuesday night. It's still not live. It's tape delayed. But, you know, if you're in the L.A. area, come check it out. But for me, I think that's huge. With Main Event's going to be on NBC, and now the top amateurs in the world fighting against each other on prime time on Fox, starting to feel a little bit like the 80s, isn't it?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? I am so pumped up about it. I'm so excited. It's just when I heard about Fox Sports televising our fight, our event, I mean, I just went crazy. I went nuts. And it's just it's an amazing feeling to know that, you know, that, and this is all for boxing. This is all for the sport of boxing.
Right.
You know, I am so excited about the whole WSB thing and Fox and you guys and your support. I mean, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you guys, and I really appreciate that. I appreciate everything that you guys have been able to do for us as a team and for the league itself. So I'm really thankful to you guys, and once again, really excited.
You know, I remember the first time hearing about this, and I tell you, when I heard it, I had said, this is something that we need in our sport. We need a league. We need to have different leagues around the states to identify, for kids to identify, and for also to build stars back into our sport, you know, putting them on primetime television and to show people that we do still have plenty of talent out there to build a superstar. And it worked out perfect, man. I'm so excited again. Last season was just fantastic. I didn't miss the LA Matadors. I didn't miss the Miami Gallos, Mexico Guerreros. Everybody, I made sure I tuned in. I DVR'd it, and I got to tell you, I cannot wait to be down there on Sunday for the debut again of your guys' return. It's going to be fun.
Hollywood, baby. Hollywood.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And listen, I mean, this time around, we got Russia. We got a team from Russia. We got a team from
right.
Italy coming in. We got a team from India, Kazakhstan. I mean, that's, my goodness. I mean, that's exciting. It's just knowing that we're out there to face the world. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's good for U.S. boxing. I think it gives American boxers and foreign boxers a great opportunity to get out there and to get known and to know that there's a lot of talented American boxers out there that are just dying and waiting for an opportunity to be shown. And this is it. This is it right here. I truly believe that.
It's the thing, you know, fight fans always like to know, you know, like, oh, I've been watching this guy since the amateurs. You know, like when Holyfield came out of the Olympics and started doing well as a pro, we'd been following him since the amateurs in my family. And we always were like, you know, I want to see this guy fight Tyson. You know, I want to see Holyfield fight this guy. And I think fight fans always like to be that insider. And this gives you that chance to get to know all the guys on a world stage, not just the Matadors, but like you said, all the other teams that are going to be coming to town. You're going to see some of the top people. Seeing, you know, I saw a bunch of gold medalists last year, or, you know, Olympic medalists that I would have never had a chance to see in person. I think that's what, you know, besides the atmosphere at the Music Box, which I think is a great venue for you guys, besides all that stuff, just the fights themselves, seeing these people before they ever become a pro, I just think it's very exciting, man. I'm really excited for this whole season.
Yep, absolutely.
Yes, I agree. We got Clemente Russo out of Italy. He won the silver medal at the 2008 Olympics. We got Domenico Valentino, which is a gold medalist at the World Championships in 2009. Just won a bronze medal at this past World Championships. I mean, we got some of the top amateur boxers out there, top talent out there that are part of this league. Rashid Warren, you know, we got a Raynell Williams once again. I mean, these are top caliber amateur boxers, and they can just go right on to the pros and become world champions someday. But they're here with us now in the WSB, so that's exciting.
Absolutely, man. And thank you again, Manny, for coming on here with us on Leaving the Ring. It's our pleasure. Like I said, you know, we've been covering you guys from the beginning, the WSB. And it's just good to see that you guys are back and you guys are coming back even stronger. The cobwebs have been shooken off the stage fright, because I know in the beginning it was all kind of like, we hope this is going to work. And I think we're done with that. Now we know it's going to work. So I wish you guys all the success and all the best, brother.
Thank you very much. And once again, you guys at Leave It in the Ring, I really appreciate all of your support. And we'll be looking forward to seeing you guys at the fight on Sunday.
Yeah, I'll
I'm
see you guys there, man.
From Vegas and go straight to the fight. So, man, I cannot
wait.
Oh, yeah,
there you go. That's another good one, huh? Pacquiao versus Marquez. So, hey, I'll be looking forward to that, too.
I'll be rolling in Manny with the knockout girls, okay? I'm the cow guy.
Hey, there you go, bro. That's a way to do it.
You leave Janelle alone. Leave Janelle alone. All right then, man. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Take care.
You got it, guys. You guys take care. Thank you for everything once again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You too. There you go. Manny, the head trainer for the L.A. Matadors. If you haven't checked that out, the World Series of Boxing, you got to check it out, man. It's a lot of fun. You get a chance to see some kids that are upcoming, top quality, stellar competition. They go all out, you know, no headgear. Like you said, you don't want to call it semi-pros. It's just good traditional boxing, and you're going to be glued and stuck to it.
Yeah, it's just fun, you know, and the whole atmosphere. If you've never been to like a club fight, it takes that kind of atmosphere, you know, that kind of club fight mentality. But then the fighters are high-level guys, and they're all learning how to be pros against other guys, learning how to be pros. And sometimes it makes for sloppy fights. You know, some of the guys get a little tired. But, you know, that was also – I noticed that more towards the end of the season as they, you know, as they kind of wore down, because it's such a – it's a grueling schedule. You know, it's – you're fighting a ton of times. You know, every few weeks you've got another fight. You got to make weight and stay on in shape. So that's
right.
That's one of the things that, you know, but still at the same time, it's just a lot of fun, man. You know, they do all kinds of special stuff all during it. They throw out T-shirts and they're sponsored by this local bikini company. So you've got bikini girls running around. You've got the Matador knockouts. The intros got all these like you know, film and stuff like that. I've got our next guest calling in, Dave. I'll be right back.
Go right ahead, yeah. And like I said, that whole experience, when you go out to the LA Matadors, it's all electrical, man. And you're just going to sit there, and you're going to really be consumed by it. It's nonstop. The pace is just fast. It just keeps going. And then you get a chance to see some movie stars or some legends walk around, and then you get to mingle with other, you know, fight fans, hardcore fight fans, you know, that are out there checking it out in Hollywood, in Los Angeles. So it's something you don't really want to miss. If you want to have a chance to head out there, it's their comeback, so the series is starting up again. We're definitely going to talk to them a little bit of maybe giving us some tickets so we can give out to our listeners so they can have a chance to have that experience. You know, we were able to send out some folks last year to the finale of the LA Matadors and stuff. So we should be able to do that again. I'll keep you guys up posted and ready. Gable, who we got up?
I'm here with the mandatory challenger to Eric Morales. He just had a big fight a few weeks back against Ali Chiba back on September 30th. I don't want to butcher his name, so I'm going to let him introduce himself because it's a hard name to pronounce. He's out of Lagos, Nigeria. Welcome to the show, sir.
Yes, thank you. This is Olusegun Ajose.
This is Gabriel Montoya, and my co-host here is Dave Duenas. We'd like to welcome you on here, and I'm excited. I actually saw your fight. I was very, very entertained by it. I understand, you know, you're now the mandatory to Eric Morales. What are the chances you think that after seeing your fight that Eric Morales is going to want to fight you?
Yeah, firstly, thank you for having me on your show.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, I think Eric Morales obviously is running scared right now. You know, with what he saw against Ali Chiba, he knew I'm gonna be a big threat. I'm not going to be an easy opponent for him. So he hasn't decided to fight me yet. I hope he's going to make the decision to fight me because I want to fight him. You know, this guy has been holding my title for me for a little while. So I'm back. I'm here now to take it off him. You know, I know the guy is good. He's a legend. But, you know, I know I'm better than him. So all I want to do is just prove it to the rest of the world that I'm better than Eric Morales.
Do you think at this point, you know, you look at the way Eric Morales has come back, he's kind of picked opponents that he knows he can beat. You know, that last guy was a late replacement, but he was a young guy that didn't have experience. You're 31 years old. You've got a lot of experience. You've had some tough fights. What is it that's the difference between you and the guys that he's been facing? Why would you be successful at this stage?
Well, he's never fought a boxer like me. I am totally different. My style is totally different. And I am very, very determined. I am hungry. Technically, I'm better than him. Speed-wise, I'm better than him. I've been boxing for probably longer than he has been boxing. Forget how long you've known him. I have been boxing all along. I've been boxing a lot of international amateur before I even turned pro. So, you know, I've got a lot of experiences. So he knows that. He knows that I'm a big threat. He knows I'm going to beat him. So whichever his decision is, if he decides to come to the ring to fight me, great. Let him come and prove that he's better than me. And I'm going to prove that I'm better than him. And if he wants to relinquish, fair enough, relinquish. Don't just waste my time.
Right.
I am going to beat him whichever it is.
Now, when you talk about your style is different, I mean, there's not that many styles. How do you? What's the definition of why would your style be so different from others?
Well, I don't like to blend in. I like to stand out. That's who I am. I think differently from all the boys. I walk differently. And that's why I've not been beaten so far. And it's working for me, so I don't have to change it. You know, fighting Eric Morales is gonna be a good thing for me because the whole world is gonna see me better. They're gonna see what I can do. Even when I fought Chiba, my performance was good, but that's just like 50% of what I can do. But when I fight a better opponent, I step up and I'm gonna perform better. So I don't mind fighting the like of, you know, Eric Morales, Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather. I don't mind fighting anybody. I just want to prove myself that I'm the best in the world.
How did you get started in boxing? Your country has such a rich history. I'm curious. How did you begin?
Actually, I began when I was like 6 years old. My dad happens to be a boxing coach, but he didn't put me to boxing. I didn't want to box. I wanted to do basketball. So I went to the gym one day, and the boys, you know, gave me a glove that I should spar a particular boxer, and I got knocked down 3 times. So I was angry with myself that I got beaten up. So 2 weeks later, I went back to the gym, and I never stopped since then. So I was in 2 sports. I was in soccer, and I was in boxing. I was good at both, but I was better at boxing. So my father told me to stick to boxing. And thank God he made that decision for me.
Who were your favorites growing up? Were you a big fan of the professor? Who are some of the fighters that you look to in terms of developing your style?
Sugar Ray Leonard, wonderful. And my modern-day boxer happened to be Roy Jones. Those two, for me, you know, they are my hero. I love the way they box. They are very intelligent. They are tough, especially Sugar Ray Leonard. He's my boxer of all time.
And kind of originals, too, you know, in that they weren't, like, Roy's not a very traditional boxer. He fights exactly the way he wants to fight and let his identity develop. Is that something that you
exactly
look to
that's
do?
What I do? That's what I do, too. I don't do what everybody do. I do things differently. I fight my own style.
Now, if Morales, have you guys heard whether or not they're willing to face you? I know Morales is looking at other opponents right now. What is your plan if he decides that he's going to vacate or try to do step-aside money or that kind of thing? What do you do in the meantime to make your case in the boxing world that you should be the guy?
Well, we're going to continue, you know, talking to the WBC, you know, making them to mandate Eric Morales to make a decision. And I'm going to leave that to my manager, to my advisor, and to my promoter. That's up to them, you know, which route they want to take. For me, all I want them to do is get the fight ready, and I'll go to the ring and do my job. Win the fight. That's it. That's my job.
Right.
That's what I do. So, I'm willing to let them do what they're supposed to do to get the fight available.
Gabriel, if I may.
Yes.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. If I may, I'd like to just touch on that question you just mentioned. In regards to, what we're looking to do right now, we're not looking to do anything but enforce the WBC's own rules in which we fought to become the mandatory, and that's what we want to do is fight for the title. Whether it's against Eric Morales, whether it's against Danny Garcia, Lucas Matisse, whoever it is that they put in front of us, at the end of the day, what we're going to fight for is for them to abide by their rules, and either he vacates the title or he fights us. One or the other. I mean, you'll hear the excuses that, oh, he wants a big fight, or Josie's not a money fight, or this or that. Well, if that's the case, relinquish your belt, because you're legally obligated to face us.
Yes, exactly right.
So if you don't want to face us, relinquish the title and let us do what we're doing. And as a world-class fighter that he is, and as a fighter that came up hard in the ranks, he definitely should know what it's like to somebody have his career on hold because they don't want to, you know, they don't know what they want to do yet. Well, they know what they want to do, but they want to do it when they're ready to do it. And for me, that shows that doesn't show professionalism and courtesy and from Eric Morales being a world-class fighter to another fighter.
It's not the seniors tour. You know, you don't get to come back and play against whoever you want to play against if you want to have a title. You know, if you want to just do like what Roy did at the end of his career and kind of just fight, you know, pay-per-view fights against whoever, that's one thing. But I agree with you. You know, if you're going to fight for the WBC title and that belt's supposed to mean something, then when there's a mandatory, you got to take that mandatory. Otherwise, you can't say, you know, hey, I'm a world title holder and I'm the fourth, you know, the first Mexican to get it in four divisions and all that. None of that means anything if you don't defend it against the guys you're supposed to. You know?
Exactly. I mean, you interviewed a former fighter. I'm sorry to interrupt. You interviewed a fighter also that I'm associated with, Winky Wright. When he was the champion, he had to defend against the non-mandatory every single time. There was no way around it. He defended against every mandatory person that he had to fight.
You know, at the same time, I want to mention, and I guess I'm going to play the devil advocate here, though, is that fans, though, are going to say, shouldn't he fight somebody notable first before you can force the hand of making the WBC and Eric Morales turn their cheek towards your fighter?
No, we can't do that. Why? We fought for the mandatory. We followed the rules that they implied, that they implemented. I'm sorry. And
right.
The rules that they implemented, we fought somebody that they felt was qualified us to be the – mind you, Josie's been number one in the world for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Alexander lost to Timothy Bradley and became champion and went right back down to number one. How that happened, we have no idea. Ajosi should have been fighting for the title principally, not Eric Morales. So if the WBC wanted to give Eric Morales the opportunity to fight for the title, it should have been against Ajosi. We were ready and available. He didn't have to fight that young kid that he just fought.
Right.
We were available. But they chose to go around us. I even offered our services through our promoter to Golden Boy and told him our fighter's ready when they needed a last-minute replacement when Medina, I believe it was, pulled out, or Guerrero, I forgot who it was, pulled out of the fight.
Yeah, Medina, right.
Yeah, we were available, and I emailed them.
Damien, let me ask you, because I'm always curious talks.
Hold on a minute. Why can't Morales just fight me? He's a champion. He's supposed to fight a mandatory challenger. Why can't he fight me? That's unfair.
Right. I think that at the end of the day, the reason why he probably won't fight you is because of the money factor is there looking at the bigger purse. You know, Damien, I'm just curious.
He should drop his title then.
Right.
He should drop his title then. He shouldn't waste my time. He wasn't supposed to fight for his title in the first place.
I agree, but, you know, as we all know, boxing is not always black and white. There's a lot of gray in boxing. I think that's why I can't ever say that there hasn't been a dark age in boxing. But Damien, when we talk about the WC rules and their regulations and what they apply, we're talking about a contract that's not even in ink. It's in pencil. So what is the conversation? I'm always curious. What is the conversation and what are the explanations that the WBC give your fighter and yourself when they clearly do not stand by anything that they say of right?
Well, first of all, just to let you know, we did send a letter, a dissenting warning letter to the WBC before we did our mandatory. I mean, before we did our elimination. We did send a letter to the WBC stating that we were going to sue them, and basically on the same grounds as the Graziano Rattani, same situation they had with him, which is what was going on through us. Second of all, they're not giving any explanation, and our the promoter, Lou DiBella, has reached out to them and basically worked, you know, try to just tell them. We did have it in writing. When he fought Ali Sheba, part of the agreement, this is written between WBC and the promoter, Lou DiBella, was in our contract that if we win under any circumstances, we will be mandatory for Morales. He would not be allowed to fight anybody else. So we pulled back the lawsuit that we were going to file because we said, you know what, we'll fight Ali Sheba. Go ahead and go fight who you're going to fight. But after this, we're going to be the mandatories and there's no excuses. And the reason we did this is because we wanted the public to know who a Josie is.
Right.
And now that they see who he is, now it's saying it doesn't matter if he's Joe Schmo from the barbershop and nobody knows him. Give up the belt. If it's about money, go chase the money. You don't need the title. Your name alone could get you the money. The title is not what brings. And Floyd Mayweather says it clearly. The fighter does the belts don't make the fighter. The fighter makes the belts.
No,
and
I agree
with belts
with that.
Don't bring money. You know what I'm saying? So give up the belt. Let us make the next step and let him, a Josie, fight for the belt, and along with whoever else wants to fight for the next available contender. We're willing to take on Danny Garcia, Lucas Matisse. We don't care who it is, Eric Morales. The point is that we're fighting for this title. Stop putting this man on hold and holding his career.
Right. No, I agree,
man. I 100% agree with you, Damien. And I think it was smart maneuvering, too, in that no one knew who Jose was. And then he had that nice fight with Ali Sheba. And I think some people even counted him out and thought that Sheba was going to pull it out. And he surprised us.
Right.
He earned his spot. He'd earned it before. And, you know, I'm kind of tired of hearing from Jose Suleiman. He tweets at me often now how they're gentlemen of the sport and they only want to do what's right for the sport, blah, blah, blah. And then you hear about this stuff.
That's BS,
and you kind of go, and the Kirkland Angulo fight, which was was an eliminator, and that's why Ann Wolf took that fight. And then when they get to Mexico, oh, it's a semifinal. It's not really a final. You know, it's a double, triple secret handshake final. I'm getting really tired of hearing from Suleiman how they care about this sport when they got hardworking guys like a Jose and Kirkland and Angulo who would, you know, deserve shots at the top spot, and they can't get them because they're protecting guys like, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., now Eric Morales, and Saul Alvarez. It's got to stop. So I wish you guys
and if
well.
If the sport fails, they fail because they live and feed, and they feed their families off of the sanctioning fees they charge these fighters.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, if the fighters don't fight and if the sport declines or deteriorates, where do you go now?
Exactly right.
You understand what I mean? And Josie deserves this fight.
Without question. He's earned the right. Well, gentlemen, we've got Alfredo Angulo calling in from Mexico, but I really thank you for calling in, and I wanted to get you guys out there and get people to know what's really going on, you know, because they get excited about hearing the name, like, you know, Morales wants to fight Matisse, or he wants to fight Maidana again, or whatever, and they forget that there's a bit of justice here, and that people like Jose and other fighters, they work their asses off for a shot at a title and a name like Eric Morales. And they don't always get it, and I really think that's wrong, and I hope you guys do.
Yeah, I hope you guys get somebody in the ring. You know what I mean? Thank you, guys.
Yeah, well, Thank you very much.
Anytime. We'll have you guys on anytime. Jose, I wish you well, and good luck to you, sir.
Thank you, Vera. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure.
Take care, Josie. Well, there you go. The mandatory for Eric Morales knocking on his door saying, give me a fight. Come on, or, you know, let go of the title and stop wasting my time here on Leaving the Ring. Damon Fernandez was his is his advisor and was along with him. He's also Winky Wright's advisor as well. Gable, do we have time to patch in another caller to hear that wants to talk about Kirtland and Angulo, or are we going straight to Angulo right now?
Well, I think we're about 4 minutes past. We should probably give Angulo a call. I know he's waiting for us in Mexico to call him in. So maybe we get that caller in right after because we're supposed to call him at 6. It's a little past.
Okay. Do we have our translator with us right now?
Let me grab the translator and you call Angulo. And I could stay here and filibuster while you call Angulo, and I'll get the translator to call in.
All right. There we go and stuff. You know. So I'm gonna wait till our translator is on right now before we call Alfredo El Perro Angulo, who had a sensational fight with James Kirtland. Of course, he ended up on the short end of the fight, being stopped in round 6 by James Kirtland. But that first round, man, was just something to talk about. You know, I think that first round is in the books of round of the year. I'm not sure if this was fight of the year, because there was so many other fights that did come along that gave us some great, great back and forth action. But to be on HBO, you know, we've been really hard on HBO Boxing After Dark. You know, we kind of really veered off really far from when it had started off with, you know, Marco Antonio, the Babyface Assassin, debuting it back in the late 90s. I believe we got Z, our translator, on with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yes, hi, Z. How you doing?
Hi. I'm doing okay. How are you?
Doing fine. Let's see if we can get a hold of Alfredo Angulo right now. It goes. The phone is ringing.
Hi, Dios. Bueno.
Ay, Dios mío. ¿Cómo estás?
Bien, bien.
Bien, bien. Alfredo, David Duenes con Gabriel Montoya aquí en la Libre Ring Radio. Nosotros, ya sabes, vamos a hablar en inglés y Z va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Okay.
First off, I want to ask how his health is doing. Is he fine? Is he okay, Z?
Hola, Alfredo, ¿cómo estás?
Bien,
lo primero que queremos saber es cómo estás de salud.
Muy bien, gracias, Alfredo. Todo bien. Descansando.
He says he's doing fine. You know, thank God he's doing fine, just resting.
Good.
Alfredo, this is Gabriel Montoya. First off, I want to congratulate you on the chin and the heart and the wonderful fight you gave us. I know it's not the result that you wanted, but in a sense, I think your stock is kind of raised because of what you gave us. So first, I wanted to say thank you to you.
Primero que nada, quiero darte las gracias por la pelea espectacular que nos brindaste. Quiero felicitarte pues por tu mentón, por el gran corazón. Y pues sabes que el resultado de la pelea no fue el que esperabas, pero sí sabe que pues tu valor como boxeador pues aumentó mucho más gracias a tu desempeño en la pelea.
No, dile que muchas gracias, pero desgraciadamente pues no me han dejado estar en Estados Unidos, que es donde yo estoy impuesto a trabajar con toda esa gente en Estados Unidos y hacer una gran preparación allá en Estados Unidos. Desgraciadamente quise hacerla aquí en México, no me salió como yo hubiera querido, pero pues lo importante es que la gente que asistió a esa pelea y la que la miró en la televisión quedó contenta que le gustó y la función que vieron.
He says, well, thank you very much, first of all. Well, he hoped to prepare like he did in the U.S., where, you know, with this, sort of the same people he was working there in the in the United States and do a great preparation like he did when he was here. But in Mexico, I mean, he did it in Mexico. Things did not turn out the way he wanted or he expected. But the most important thing for him is that both the people that went to see the fight live and the people that saw it on TV were the most important thing for him is that those people are happy with the show that they put on.
In retrospect, do you think that because you're in Mexico and you don't have access to everything like Daryl Hudson and the kind of training camps you were starting to have, that you weren't as prepared as you would have liked to have been? Is that kind of what's holding you back in a sense?
¿Tú crees que mirándolo en retrospectiva, el hecho de que no estuvieras en Estados Unidos y por lo tanto no tuvieras acceso a muchas de las cosas que hubieras tenido acceso si estuvieras aquí, por ejemplo, Daryl Hudson y otras cosas en términos de entrenamiento, crees que eso es lo que te aguantó un poco y pudo haber afectado?
Yo creo que haber entrenado en Estados Unidos he entrenado un poco mejor porque batallé mucho para obtener sparring. Nadie quería viajar a México para boxear conmigo. Batallé mucho con eso. Y pues si yo hubiera estado en Estados Unidos, yo sé que no voy a tener ningún problema, que haya encontrado a la gente necesaria para boxear y hubiera hecho un mejor entrenamiento del que hice. Hoy tuve que trabajar con lo que tenía a la mano, que era sinceramente casi nada.
Yes, if I would have trained in the U.S., it would have been a little bit better. For example, here I had a lot of trouble finding sparring partners. It took a long time to find people because nobody wanted to travel to the U.S. to spar with me. I know that in the U.S. I wouldn't have had those problems because it's easier to find people there for sparring. And so he says that I did the best that I could with the resources I had. And, you know, in those situations, you just have to work with what you have in hand.
Pero quiero dejar algo bien claro. No quiero restarle méritos a James Kirkland, que James hizo una buena preparación, hizo una buena pelea y tuvo una muy buena noche esa noche.
But having said that, I don't want to take anything away from Kirkland or any merits away from him. He had an excellent preparation. He fought a great fight, and his performance was great that night.
Let's ask him this, because the last time we had spoken to him, he said the visa to come back to the States was, it was fixed already, that it was just waiting for him to go pick it up. If he knew he had this trouble in Mexico with sparring partners and whatnot, why did he not use the visa to come back to the States to be prepared, to be properly prepared for Kirkland?
¿Quieres saber si tenía, si se había resuelto el asunto de la visa, porque no pudiste viajar a Estados Unidos al menos, o sea, usar la visa que tenías para viajar a Estados Unidos al menos solamente para entrenar para esta pelea?
No, porque no me lo he otorgado. La visa impone que era de 1 a 6 meses que eran de hablarme para recoger mi visa, la cual no me han hablado. Y sinceramente, si yo no entreno en Estados Unidos y si no hago mi preparación como debe de ser, no, ya en Estados Unidos no voy a volver a pelear hasta que no esté entrenando yo en Estados Unidos otra vez para mi pelea.
Well, the visa, they told me that they were going to call me in about like 1 to 6 months so that I could go to the office and pick it up, but they have not called me yet. And
so did they lie to him?
Because that regarding, he says that they have up to now they still haven't called him to get the, to receive his visa, but he says that if he doesn't train in the U.S. the way he's used to prepare and train in the U.S., he's just not going to fight anymore until he can go back and, you know, train in the U.S.
I'm a little confused.
Wow.
Because I remember the last time he was on, he said that it was waiting for him. So did they call him and lie to him that his visa was there?
So la última vez que se tuvieron en el show, había dicho que todo estaba resuelto y que solamente estabas esperando a que te entregaran la visa. Entonces, ¿tú crees que en ese sentido te pudieron haber mentido un poco porque finalmente eso se tardaron demasiado y no te han llamado?
Bueno, pues es que es un proceso por el que uno tiene que pasar, de que como se puede tardar un día, se puede tardar un mes, o se puede tardar 6 meses, eso ya depende de ellos, ya no depende de uno como persona.
So not necessarily, it's just that it's a very long, kind of unpredictable process, in which it can be ready in one day, it can take 2 months or 6 months. That doesn't depend on one as a person.
Now, in the fight, you know, there's a lot of people that say, well, you punched yourself out. Take me through that first minute when you drop him and you started to unload all your punches. Do you agree that you punched yourself out, or was it that he made you miss? And was there a moment in that period, that minute, where you started to feel tired or you started to realize he's not as hurt as I think?
En esta, vamos a hablar un poquito sobre la pelea. Hay mucha gente que ha comentado que tú mismo como que tú mismo te debilitaste, te desgastaste tirando golpes, ¿no? Golpeando. Pues, ¿puedes llevarnos a través de ese primer minuto de pelea y qué fue lo que pasó según tú estabas atacando a Kirkland? Si fue eso, si fue que pues de tanto tirar golpes te debilitaste, o si fue más bien que él te hizo fallar los golpes o que te cansaste. ¿Puedes llevarnos sobre qué fue lo que pasó durante ese minuto en el primer asalto?
Yo creo que yo conocí a James como un golpe que fue a la lona. Cuando el referee se siguió la pelea, yo traté de que el pleito se terminara. Yo conecté a James en más de una ocasión con más de 6 golpes, lo conecté, y se supone que el reglamento dice que cuando tú conectas un peleador más de 5 o 6 veces sin recibir respuesta, es tiene que ser un conteo oficialmente. Yo estaba esperando que el referee le contara, cuanto menos. Yo tiré muchos golpes en el primer round, pero es algo a lo que normalmente yo estoy acostumbrado, la gente está acostumbrada a ver que el perro tira bastantes golpes, y fue parte del cual yo me cansé, y yo vi sinceramente que el referee no iba a hacer su trabajo, sinceramente, como tenía que hacer, claro, sin quitarle méritos a Jim por su pelea.
Just now, I landed a punch that threw James to the canvas. The referee ordered the fight to continue, and I tried for the fight to end right there in that round. In more than one occasion, I threw over 6 punches, and according to the rules, if you land more than, you know, 5 or 6 times in a fighter without having response from the fighter back, then there should be, the referee should count. I was waiting for the referee to do the count. He didn't. And so I just, continued throwing punches. I'm used to that. People are used to Perro throwing and landing a lot of punches. And eventually I got tired, and then I realized also that the referee was not going to do his job like the way he should have done his job. But I don't want to take anything away from Kirkland. He you know, deserves a lot of credit. He did a great job.
I had heard that this ref was involved in a ring death, a fight that he let go too long. Were you aware of that? And as the fight went on and you were very tired, I know you would never quit in a fight, you would never give up. Did that concern you?
El referee se conoce, ¿no?, que estuvo envuelto en una muerte que ocurrió en el cuadrilátero, en un combate que él dejó que durara demasiado tiempo. Según tú te fuiste cansando durante el round y viste que el referee pues no iba a hacer nada, ¿te pasó eso por la mente o sabías eso del árbitro?
Pues no sabía, no me di cuenta, sinceramente, ya hasta que estaba arriba del ring. Ese referee ya me había tocado que refiriera una pelea y fue cuando yo ya me di cuenta que él no iba a hacer su trabajo como tenía que hacerlo, porque él fue el que recibió la pelea mía contra Joe Jorge. Él recibió esa misma pelea y sinceramente Jorge contra Joe Jorge. Cuando yo peleé con Jorge tenía que darle parado la pelea, sinceramente, porque estaba recibiendo muchos golpes y desgraciadamente pues yo en esa ocasión conecté a Jorge con muchos golpes hasta dejarlo casi inconsciente arriba del ring. Y pues eso no fue mi culpa, fue culpa de que el referee pues no parara la pelea, y yo simplemente estaba haciendo mi trabajo arriba del ring.
He says, no, I didn't know about the referee being involved in a case of ring death. I didn't know about him until I stepped into the ring. At that time, I realized, you know, he was not going to do his job. I had him as a referee in one fight before, and it was the same type of thing. He didn't, you know, do his job. I just continued with the fight. That fight was the fight against Harry Joe Jorge, and he says that the referee in that fight should have stopped the fight. Jorge was receiving a lot of punishment, a lot of punches, and in that occasion he landed more than one punch and left Jorge almost unconscious in the ring. It wasn't his fault. It was just that, you know, the referee didn't stop the fight and he was doing his job as a fighter, which is just, you know, to continue fighting.
When we go back to that one part where his mouthpiece was not in his mouth, what happened there? Was it a case that everybody was in panic? Was it a case that he just walked away from it? What was going on when that mouthpiece was not there ready to go?
En el momento en que la tu boquilla no estaba lista, ¿no?, para que tú pues salieras, ¿qué fue lo que pasó ahí?
Me pusieron mi mouthpiece y cuando yo me encuentro que lo traía el mouthpiece, yo le dije al ref y James iba a tirar golpes, y cuando yo iba caminando hacia la esquina ya para que me pusieran mi mouthpiece.
Pero fue, ¿por qué crees que pasó eso? ¿Fue algo, no sé, de momento de superación de la esquina o...?
No, yo creo que sí, fue un poco de desesperación de la esquina, que de no ver, de estar viendo lo que estaba pasando, yo creo. Pero no tenía que haber pasado.
Since when I realized that I didn't have the mouthpiece, the mouthpiece on, I told the referee, James was already coming towards me to throw punches as I, you know, was walking to my corner to get the mouthpiece. As far as why it happened, he says, well, maybe you're right. Maybe it was a little bit of desperation from the corner because they were seeing everything that was happening. But he was not completely sure.
Let me ask him this, you know, and I don't know if I'm out of line when I'm asking this here, you know, and I've known Pedro for a very long time, but I'm hearing a little bit of denial in his part. Is he taking this as a major disappointment for himself? Because he won over so many fans, so many people have, I think his stock has went up. Is he just in such dying that he can't accept this loss of what has happened on Saturday night?
Él dice que escuchándote hablar, él se pregunta si la pelea fue una decepción bien grande para ti, porque él dice, a pesar de todo, en términos de la fanaticada, en términos de la gente, pues te aprecian más, incluso más como boxeador luego de la pelea. Entonces, en ese sentido, pues las cosas, como la fanaticada te ve, pues mejoró. Pero él no sabe si tú estás como en negación un poco, o cómo te sientes al respecto, si la misma pues desilusión te ha llevado un poco a un estado de negación.
No, yo creo que simplemente lo que yo le pido al gobierno de Estados Unidos es de que me den mi la oportunidad de regresar a Estados Unidos a hacer mi trabajo como normalmente estoy acostumbrado yo a hacerlo, y a toda esa gente que sigue al perro, yo siempre les mando a decir que lo único que pueden esperar de mí es un gran espectáculo. Yo creo que después de esta pelea no les queda duda, y al contrario, yo creo que
he there? Hello?
Hello? Yeah. No, his phone was dropped.
Well, let me translate what he said then. He was saying that, no, I don't think I'm in denial. I just asked the government of the U.S. to give me the opportunity to come back to the U.S. and do my job the way that I'm used to do my job. And to all the people that follow Perro, just want to, you know, let them know that they can always expect from me a great show, and I hope that after the fight there has been no doubt that, you know, things are that they can expect a great show from me. And we love him.
Dave, you want to try to get him back? I did have one more question.
Yeah. Let me try to get him back here, and
I don't want him to leave angry.
No, definitely.
I still, you know, while you call him back, you know, I've watched the fight, you know, a bunch of times, and I'm just still in awe of what they both did together. You know, we always knew that it was going to be special. We always knew it was going to be exciting. But the effort that both guys put on was just tremendous. I mean, I think it's what I always kind of say about these big pay-per-view fights and people that label other fighters as great. And how can you be great when it's 7-1, you know, or 10-1, or we know it's who's going to win or who should win? It's when we get fights like this, when two people face each other and there's a lot on the line, not a lot of money, but a lot of pride, and your career gets to move forward or it moves back, and these guys risk it and they bring the best out of each other. That's when you define greatness, at least for me.
Right.
And to me, coming out of this fight, both guys were great. You know, they were just, I know it felt one-sided after a while, but man, you know, it was as exciting a fight as I've ever seen. Can we get him back?
No, it's not going through for some reason. Yeah, it's not going through.
Hmm.
Well,
yeah. I know that was a pretty tough question for him to answer, and you know, I'll try him a little later. But yeah, I just can't get him back right now.
Shoot. Well, I hope he's not mad.
I don't think it's him. I think it's actually the Skype. It dropped it, and it's not letting me call him back.
Well,
so I apologize about that, listeners. You know, and
reason number 76. I can't stand Skype.
Exactly. Shoot.
Well, let's try him one more time, and then we can let our translator go.
Okay. See if it works. No, keeps dropping it. God damn it.
Frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. It is frustrating, you know. And you know, I think it's really hard for somebody that put their whole all into something, you know, that they and this is the biggest fight of their career. It's not going through, guys, so I'm going to have to just let this one go here, unfortunately, because I did want to completely hear what he had to say, you know, left, but we're just having some Skype difficulties here for some reason. But going back is – yeah, I know – going back to Angulo, you know, is just hearing, and that's why I said I hope I was not out of line in asking him that, but at the same time, I was kind of hearing a little bit of denial with the ref and the preparation in Mexico, and I remember clearly him saying he has the visa, he just had to go pick it up. I was asking, why was it not? What happened? What was he lied to? Was there some miscommunication? And no way or no how am I calling Angulo a liar. I hope that's not the way he was taking it. But if we didn't ask the question, somebody else was going to jump on that and ask that, because the fact is those things were brought up there. And the same thing with the referee and whatnot. I think it's a little hard. I think as a fighter, it's a little hard to accept what happened, rather than, you know, not to say, even though he did say, hey, listen, I'm not taking nothing away from Kirtland. He came prepared and he was ready, you know. But at the same time, I think that it was a little hard for him to swallow that he did lose that fight in Mexico when everything was in his favor. You know what I mean? When everything, the, you know, everything was in line, the moon and everything else was in favor.
Yeah, you know, it's got to be heartbreaking, you know. It's got to be that kind of bummed me out. Apparently, though, I asked Z, and she said he's not – he wasn't upset. So I think we just lost him. But
well, he was talking in the middle, and then he just got dropped. So it was, you know, not him hanging up on us or anything like that, you know. Yeah, Gabe, if you want to give him a shot on your phone, mine's not. It's not going through. Skype is not going through.
I don't know. I wouldn't know how to patch him in from Skype to hear is the only problem, because you're on Skype. I'm actually just on
right.
Well,
you know what? Well, I'm trying it again, and it's still just hanging up. It's not even, see, it just hangs right back up and stuff. So I'm thinking it's just Skype. But you know what? What time do we have? We have Curlin coming in at 7 o'clock. Let's patch in some fight fans. They've been waiting patiently here on Leaving the Ring, man, to chop it up with us. Let's just do that there.
Okay. Raise our spirits, because that was a little depressing. It was Angulo interruptus right there. I wanted some more Angulo, but you know, it's the nature of the live game. So let's get some callers in.
Yeah, and just make sure you text or hit up his PR and let him know that something did happen, and we apologize. And always love to have him back on Leaving the Ring. He's always been willing to come back on the show with us and talk to us here. So let's go with the. Claudio wants to talk Angulo versus Kirtland. What's up? You're on live right now. What's on your mind? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on live right now.
Oh, hey. Hey, guys.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys tonight?
Good, good.
Doing good?
Excellent. Just to say on Angulo's behalf, you know, it was just an excellent fight, and I don't personally think that he prepared for that type of fight. I think many people maybe would have went in second guessing whether Kirtland had the chin for it. personally, I think the only reason Ishido knocked out Kirkland is Kirkland didn't look himself in that fight. The Ishido's, you know, when you look at the type of hits that Kirkland is accustomed to taking and the kind of, you know, punches that Ishido was giving Kirkland, they were very light considered to what Kirkland can take. You know, and Kirkland is infamous for falling. I mean, in the Alan Conyers fight, he also took a right and went down. You know, so it's not uncustomary for him to go down, but the fact that he couldn't recover from such light hits was kind of, you know, maybe he was a little dried out for the fight, you know, making weight. I mean, there are many reasons for that, but just on Angulo's behalf, it was just an excellent fight, and I'm glad the Mexican fans weren't too upset with the ref or with Kirkland at the stoppage. I think the Angulo needed to be stopped to save himself, you know, because it was obvious he wasn't going to go down on his own.
It's not like you've been a Kirkland fan for a while.
Yeah, yeah, I have. I really do think he's the new Mike Tyson.
Right.
I really do. He's bringing brawling back. That he's, you know, putting energy in boxing, and that's what we need now. And I thank him for having the courage to do that. And I'm glad he's building up his defense so that we can see him a longer and that he can have a good career. His defense work is just awesome. I mean, you can see that Ann went in and really worked with him. I saw the head movement. I saw, just a lot of defense with his hands, ducking the punches, you know, a lot of slipping, smart aggressiveness, you know, just
like
a little more work.
The way he picks off shots with his hands that when they come in, the parrying and stuff like that, he mixes up his defense. It was the best defensive performance I think I've seen from him. And people are gonna kill me for saying this, but it reminded me a little bit of Aaron Pryor. It's that same kind of, I'm going to just go balls to the wall. I'm going to go right at you, throw a bunch of punches, and be right on you. But kind of athletic, and there's kind of sneaky defense, and he challenges the other guy to have that much aggression and output. I don't see anybody that can really deal with that, you know. And to Angulo's, you know, Angulo was saying, you know, he didn't prepare, and I actually believe that he didn't quite have the camp that he should have had. But I think a lot of guys, when they're done with James, if he's fighting at this level, are going to be saying the same thing. Well, you know, I didn't have this, or this went wrong. Or I think guys are going to be wondering what truck hit them when they deal with James. And I think you're right. I think this is what boxing needs, a guy like this.
Yeah.
You know, I like that he's not, you know, he's been to prison and all that, but he doesn't act, he doesn't talk thuggish. He doesn't talk bad about his opponents. He's very much a gentleman when it comes to what goes on in the ring. And I think that's that combination, along with Ann Wolf, I think the sky's the limit for them. It may not go
definitely.
Long, but it's going to be exciting while it does.
Definitely. I don't he has a couple of fights to go before he gets to a Canelo, being that a Canelo is more so of a counterpuncher. There's not going to, you know, but James is picking up skills. You know, you know, as far as I saw him using his jab more, drowning the opponent, he's doing things. Before it was just aggressiveness for aggressiveness' sake. Now it's, you know, I'm smart and I'm fighting smart, you know. But he has one or two fights before he starts getting the big, but not too many. You know, he'll be where he needs to be soon.
I think Canelo right now, to be perfectly honest. I'm not impressed by Canelo. I think he's very slow. Somebody actually referred to him as Camelo, because he moves like a camel. He's very slow. The offense is very basic. I have yet to see him. I think there's a reason why he's fighting guys that are coming up in weight and that aren't very athletic and that, most importantly, cannot punch. He got hurt by, you know, Cotto's brother, who's not a puncher and was not, you know, not a big guy. I think Kirkland would wreck him, and I think that's the problem. I don't think Golden Boy has any interest in matching him with a guy like Kirkland. Look at where they're at in their careers. Kirkland is 27 years old. He's physically priming. Canelo's 21 years old. He's yet to fight anybody worth anything, even though he's got that belt. But you've got a guy in Kirkland. I mean, look at his last year. He went from being in prison for the second time to fighting three times, losing, and then fighting three more times and having the biggest win of his career. That's experience that you cannot buy. And that's experience that Canelo does not have. I think it would be man versus boy, and I think Canelo gets wrecked in about 5-6 rounds, to be perfectly honest. And, you know, I'm also really high on James, and I always have been, but the proof is in the pudding, you know?
Definitely true. The reason I say he has one or two more fights to go before he reaches a Canelo, I do think that even though Canelo has pretty much been protected by the, you know, his management, so to speak, and he's fighting a lot of older fighters, older Mexican fighters, so, you know, that are pretty much punched out. The reason I say so, one thing I think that Canelo may have over Kirkland, even though I'm a huge Kirkland fan, is just the boxing skills and the fact of, you know, Kirkland is great when he has someone else to brawl with, you know, as long as they're brawling with him. But as far as boxing skills, you know, if you're not there to touch or brawl with, then what kind of fight is it going to be? You know, that's why I say I would love to see maybe Kirkland step up and fight a couple more boxes to get that experience before jumping onto a Canelo.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, like I pointed out earlier, the Aussie Duran fight is a fight. He's not, you know, the greatest boxer in the world, but he counters. And James had to adjust, and he had like 8 rounds of sparring for that fight, and he still was able to adjust and outbox. I just think, yeah, Canelo, you know, he's gonna want to make it a boxing match. But like Tyson always used to say, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And I think Canelo will have that plan until he's backing up and trying to do that shoulder roll. You know,
I think too. I go back with Canelo's legs is going to be a problem. He may be able to dance a little bit, but the thickness of those legs are going to be a little bit too heavy for him, you know. And I think that's why, too, you see him get a little flat-footed. That's why, too, you see him lean on those ropes. And when a fighter starts getting in that habit as a counterpuncher to depend on the ropes, to counter off of them, that, to me, leaves you with a guy like Kirtland who puts on the pressure. It really kind of favors Kirtland in so many other ways, because now Kirtland doesn't have to chase you down. Kirtland wants you on those ropes. He wants to trap you and beat you to the body and back to the head. And I just see, too, Canelo. I haven't seen Canelo yet fight a southpaw. And we look at the level of competition, not just the fact that he's fought older champions, but he's fought smaller guys that have moved up to 154. And he's been pushed around by smaller men. I just don't see him keeping Kirtland off at all. I don't even say he makes it to 6 rounds, to tell you the truth. I think 4 rounds would probably be the max for Canelo before Kirtland just gets a hold of him.
Oh,
yeah,
it'll be a while before that match is coming. I think that the boxing world is going to protect their not the boxing world, but this Canelo's managers are going to protect him a little while before they let somebody like Kirkland near him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
know.
Kilimon's like, oh, no. Yeah, hell no. You know.
But I am looking forward to the Angulo-Kirkland rematch. I think Angulo deserves to get that rematch. And, you know, if it's even close or you know, which I don't expect it to be, let's play devil's advocate. I think it'll be an excellent trilogy, just like the Berto Ortiz fight. When you know, if Berto pulls it out, I would love to see this become a trilogy. I mean, we haven't seen one, a good one, you know, since Gotti, you know, and Ward, you know, and like I said, I love the brawling coming back.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, Claudia, thank you very much for calling in, and I'm going to put you back on hold because we got to patch in a couple other fight fans that have been on hold. Patiently, okay?
No problem. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Our pleasure. Call back. Let's Kirkland fans have to stick together.
Let's go with CT, who wants to talk Angulo Kirkland and Pacquiao Marquez, which is a fight we haven't even talked about. I forgot about it. It's going to be happening this Saturday. CT, what's up, brother? What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, brother.
Hey, Kirkland definitely proved me wrong. I was going for Angulo. And I think, you know what? Roy Jones said something that was very interesting. He said, you know, they asked him a question, do you think Kirkland's going to come back? And in the middle of that exchange where Angulo was punching at him, Roy Jones said that Kirkland was the underdog in this fight. He has something to prove. He knows he's got to do what he's got to do. And he definitely did that. He, you know, he took the shots. He went down. His eyes didn't look too glazy. He was stumbling a little bit, but that was because he was taking some punches a little bit. But he came back with an uppercut that he caught Angulo with in between. And I think that caught Angulo's attention. while Angulo was punching himself out a little bit in the first round, you know, Kirkland capitalized. And that's the type of fighter that's going to be very, for other opponents to want to fight him, they're going to be terrified. It's like someone's fighting, like, the Terminator or some shit. You know, you hit this guy and he comes back. But definitely, he showed things that I didn't think he also had. I also thought Kirkland was kind of a, you know, come forward fighter, very aggressive, but he showed a pretty good jab, you know. He showed a little bit of patience. And
Head movement, too. You know what I mean?
Well,
I'm sure he was going side to side, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
He knew when to back off. He knew when to, you know, he didn't sit in the pocket and just go, all right, I'm just going to throw everything. He was very smart. You know, he would kind of be shifty. He'd pop a guy with the straight left, and then he'd move back and use the jab and move. He showed a lot more tools than I think a lot of people thought. And they forget, you know, he could have gone on the Olympic team, and he decided not to. He decided to turn pro, feed his family, and, you know, and that was basically the thing, you know, that he had all those skills, but it's the aggression, it's that mentality that that he's willing to just go for it and go crazy that makes him special, you know. But I think when push comes to shove, the skills will show.
You know, too.
Oh, yeah.
Too. Also, what I saw here is this is a different type of. We had two beasts in that ring. One is rightfully so named El Perro. That's the way he fights. He fights like a dog. A dog attacks, you know, and he's nonstop. And we saw that from Perro, but we also saw him get gassed out. And when he got hurt, when you hit the top of the nose of the dog, what happens? He doesn't know what to do. He bellies up. With Kirtland, we saw a lion. A guy that knew exactly when to strike, how to kind of dart in and out, and basically took his time with this prey. That's what I saw. Two different type of animals in that ring. One that came forward, one that when he bit, he made sure he held on. The other one, scratch, scratch, and then when it was up for the kill, he absolutely went for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think you guys are right, though. I think, you know, Golden Boy Promotions is definitely going to steer Alvarez away from him, even though I think that'll be a really good fight. I think if he can't get an Alvarez fight, possibly fight, like, you know, K-9 Bundridge, you know, pick up a title and possibly, you know, down the line unify it. I think that's the path I think Kirkland should probably go, even though it's going to be tough. But I think with Bundridge, it'll be an easier, you know, easier opportunity for him to get a fight, because I think Bundridge just wants to fight anybody right now.
I think that's really the fight, you know.
Right.
We'll find out. We're going to have James in about 14 minutes. He's going to call in here, or I'm going to call him. But I really, if listening to Ann talk and from what I understand, you know, I think it's title time. You know, and people will say, "Well, wait a minute." You know, but if you look at that 154, there are titles to be had and guys to go after. I think Austin Trout might be a little bit. I would wait for that fight just a second, because he's got good skills. He doesn't bring a lot of money, but he brings danger. I would wait for both of those guys for that to be a good money fight. But I would go after Bundridge. You know,
yeah.
I would like to see them. I would like to see that fight be made, because, like you said, I think Bundridge is willing to fight anybody and wants to make some good money and wants to make a name for himself. And I think Kirkland needs a title, because that's where the real money is. Not so much in the title, but in the defenses. You start to make money when you start to defend. And selling Kirkland 12-round fights on HBO, building towards pay-per-views as a title holder as opposed to just a guy, it's going to be so much better for his career. And I think Bundridge is the guy that he can beat, the title he can get. And then you do a unification, you know, with Trout down the line, and the winner of that gets to fight Canelo in a complete unification. And then you have yourself a pay-per-view. You have a real fight. I think that's really the way to go. I would do Bundridge, and then I would, if you win that fight, I would go after a Carlos Molina, who's certainly deserving. Considering he beat Cintron, and yet Cintron's getting that title shot which is kind of says everything about Canelo, doesn't it?
That's crazy. I was reading that too.
But Molina would give you a different look. He would give you more of a boxer and kind of a slick guy that's tricky, but he doesn't have a lot of power. So it's a tough fight, but it's not completely dangerous.
But he's a tough guy, too. I think he's a tough guy.
Yeah, he's a very tough guy.
Right.
That's a good win if you can get it, and then we can start talking about the bigger guys. Certainly the bigger names and certainly the more dangerous people, like maybe a Martinez, you know, 2-3 fights. I think 3 fights, and you got to make that fight, you know.
I was just going to say, how about Laura? How do you think Laura would do against Kirkland?
I think it's a really fun fight. Yeah, it's a fun fight. The guy's got heart. But also, you know, think about this, that he got hurt. You know, he got injured against Paul Williams, who is a strong puncher, but not a big puncher. I really wonder what he would do with a guy like Kirkland, who's the same size as him and is not shy, you know, is not shop-worn. He's actually kind of priming. He doesn't have a lot of power. And again, Molina pretty much beat him. He didn't get the win, but he pretty much beat Lara. I would say that Kirkland would probably win that fight just because he doesn't have the kind of power to keep James off, and I don't know if he has the kind of strength. He's got the skills to outbox him, but I don't think he's got the size. But I'd watch. I'd definitely watch that fight.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying, when we talk about skill level and somebody that's going to be there as well to make Kirkland work for that win, Laura is a perfect candidate, just like Molina. You know, not even writing off Paul Williams. I hate to say, I know some fight fans are going to be like, no, I wouldn't want to see that. Paul Williams as well. I mean, why not throw him back into the mix, you know? I know some folks were saying he should retire. I didn't see that, you know. I still think that, you know, if he came back solid, he should be able to do something there. Also, too, I mean, who's to say Curlin can't get the winner of Cotto and Margarito? They're at 154.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, I think there's a lot of viable fights out there for Kirkland. It just depends on what route he decides to go with. And we're talking about Bungwich. Is a title title route? Absolutely. Why not? Give it up to the kid. But I think there's not going to be a shortage of names. You still got Vance Morosian. You know, he tweaks a lot, but we like to see him get back into that ring and do his thing. And, you know, still got Canelo. Our hopes and our fingers are crossed for Canelo, ACT, brother. You want to talk Pacquiao Marquez. Who you got?
Yeah, I got Pacquiao in this fight, but Freddie Roach said something that was kind of interesting. He said, you know, the way that Marquez is going about his muscle frame, he said he would think that Marquez would try to be a little bit more on a speedy side, make his muscles a little bit leaner or whatever, but I think Marquez just wants it so bad. He's so... In a way, he's almost desperate to try to get Pacquiao as much as he could. It's gonna fall against him. I think Pacquiao's gonna capitalize. I think Freyush is right. I think Marquez is not gonna be as quick. He's not gonna be able to time Pacquiao coming in. And I think Pacquiao's very well developed in his weight class, and he's gonna take advantage of it. And I think it's gonna go a little bit longer than what other people think. To me, I think it's gonna go late round stoppage, maybe around 9th or 10th round.
You know, the thing, when I look at how he's bulking up and he's got Memo now and he's doing a little bit different things than what he was normally doing, okay? And you could see the size difference. For me, for some reason, man, my gut feeling is saying that I don't think they're really looking for a boxing match for the Marquez team. I think they're bulking it up to really try to bang with Pacquiao. You know what I mean? Just because of the fact that they – Nacho definitely, even though he's denying it, but I think he sees that Marquez is two notches from when the first time and the second time Marquez and Pacquiao have fought each other. This is the only way is to go out with gusto, go out on your shield. And I think they think they could catch Pacquiao if they have a little bit more muscle behind the punches. I don't know why, but I just don't see it going past four rounds. I just see Marquez, a different guy, trying to do something different, and it's just not going to work out for him, man. But that's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, however it goes down, I mean, hope it's just a good fight, you know what I mean? I hope it's, you know, I don't know, for my sake, I just don't hope he just gets blown out like that. I want to see a good fight like the first two were.
Absolutely, brother. ACT, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right, thank you.
In about Almost seven about more ready. Minutes... Yeah, about seven more minutes, we're going to have James Kirkland, the winner of Saturday night fight with Alfredo Perro Angulo. I got to get some water. My mouth is drying up over here. and talk about his thoughts and what's up on the agenda. Let me see. Do we think we have enough time to pass it? Another fight fan here, Gabe?
Sure. Why not?
Okay, let's
go. Just 7 minutes.
Let's go. I don't have a name here, but I'll just say your. I'll say your area code. It's 317. Who am I speaking to? And you're on live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
This is Daryl.
Daryl, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
What's going on with you, bro? Man, I wanted to say I'm going to make it quick because I gotta punch the clock at 10. Well, it's 10 here, so 10 o'clock. So 7 minutes from now, but. Kirkland really showed me he's much more skilled than I thought he was. I thought he was just a ballroom brawler, and I think that's a lot of what we saw with the training that Ann Wolf was putting him through, and that's what gave us that impression. But I saw him do some things like the last of, well, a couple of callers back said he got a snuck an uppercut in between some punches, and he was rolling with some of those shots, a lot of those shots that looked like they were really landing. When you go back and watch their fight, he's doing a lot of moving, a lot of subtle things that I didn't think he was capable of doing. And I don't know if that's from who was training him before Ann Wolf or since he's gone back to Ann Wolf, but he showed me a lot there in that fight. And I don't think that Golden Boy, like I said on Twitter, they're going to have a tournament the night of the fight, a triathlon, and they're going to have a molding at the end of it, an electric fence for him to get to Canelo.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of routes. You know, I think there's a lot of routes here. Sorry, I just getting a text to confirm what's going on later. Canelo, to me, you know, there's just that reality of there's alternate realities in boxing. There's multiple leagues going on. You've got the Bob Arum League, you've got the Golden Boy League, and then you've got, like, the WBC League. Me, a guy like Kirkland, who's exciting, I think boxing needs to get behind. Even a guy like Angulo, who's exciting, boxing needs to get behind him. Will they? I don't know. And I find it very interesting this week that, I think we talked about this, that Kirkland was, in a sense, sent down to Mexico to lose.
Right.
You know, a bigger money fight in Mexico would have been Angulo versus Canelo. Would have been huge if Angulo was able to beat Kirkland. But Angulo says, thank you for the interview, and, you know, he's all good, by the way.
Okay, great.
Yeah. He was just waiting for us to have more questions, but he thanked us for the interview. But basically, you know, he was sent down there to lose. He didn't. But I find it interesting that here it is, Thursday night. He's done one interview. Somebody else got an interview with him. I think Chris Mannix over at SI.com got him, like, right after the fight. But where's the welcome home for James Kirkland? Where are the press releases saying, welcome back, you went to Mexico, you know, you took a tough fight, which Bonas Martin Rosen wouldn't do, and you were victorious in exciting fashion? Where's the media day where we can all go meet him in Los Angeles or New York, all the major fight cities, and, you know, and celebrate this guy's win and talk about a potential new star in boxing? Golden Boy is acting like they didn't want him to win. I mean, looking at Oscar De La Hoya's face after the fight, he looked like somebody, you know, mugged him in the alley and stole his wallet. He didn't look like a happy promoter, and I have to kind of wonder about that and why that is. And to me, I would be talking about him nonstop, especially on a week where, you know, Manny Pacquiao's fighting. You could kind of jump on that. I mean, Mayweather did that by announcing his next fight last week, you know, by saying, well, I'm coming back, and now he's back in the mix, and everybody's talking about him, even though he's not going to do anything for another 8 months. Golden Boy really needs to get on the bandwagon with their own fighter and start treating him like this guy's a potential star instead of backing a paper champion in Canelo. I know he sells more tickets, but the guy hasn't really – I mean, have you been excited by one round of a Canelo fight the way you were by any round that you could just see in,
right,
in Angulo's
exactly.
Fourth fight? Nope.
Not one.
Not at all. Not one. Not one.
Real quick, I agree with you. He was totally sent down there to lose. They were trying to dump him, get rid of him, and now I think they're scrambling. They don't really know what to do at this point. My last thing on the Marquez Pacquiao. I mean, I don't think Marquez had a chance to win, but I've seen a guy like who was it, Tarver, who spent his whole, he spent 12 years aiming to get that one fight with Roy Jones, and he told everybody he was going to beat him, and when he got that shot, he did. So, I mean, I don't think he has a chance in the fight, but, hey, this is boxing, you know what I'm saying? But that's what I got, right. I got, guys. I'm about to hit this clock. Take it easy.
All right, brother, you take care. Thanks for calling in, man. You know, it's funny, too, because a little later after we have James Kirtland, it's about a 40-minute interview, and it's probably going to go over on our regular scheduled show, which is 5 to 8. So don't hang up. It's going to roll over as soon as we put on the Ann Wolf interview. And you're going to love to hear how she talks about how they were really sent there to lose in Mexico against Alfredo Angulo. Gabe, are we patching them in right now, or do we have time to put another fight fan that wants to talk about Angulo and Kirtland?
I gotta call him right now. So
okay.
Should about 30 seconds if he answers.
Go right ahead, you know. And I know we're always busy here. We always try to get everybody on the line with us to speak to us about boxing. And as soon as we can get another opening, we definitely will. If you haven't had a chance to go and see our magazine, Undisputed Fight Magazine, go check it out. The November one's going to be out this Friday. It's been a little delayed just because we're trying to settle in. We merged with Undisputed, so trying to bring in all the new ideas and everything else has kind of set us back. And you know how it is when it's moving; it's a little stressful trying to get things on the road. So be patient with us. It's only $1.99. It's $9.99 for the whole year. 12 issues. You can't beat that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, $10 all boxing. Great articles. There's a great article about a Marine that passed away, Jimenez, and how he was treated. You're gonna be disgusted, but at the same time, you're gonna want to do something about it. We also got a great preview about Sergio Martinez. You know, the price to make the price for power, written by David Chan. Mark Ortega did two great pieces on there. You got to check out, and the whole UK staff, you know, they did some fantastic pieces on there. You're not going to want to miss out. You want to catch up and read if you hadn't had a chance to check out the September issue. I mean, the October issue. Go check it out, man. Anyways, I'm waiting for Gabriel to let me know that he's here. Gabe, you back?
I'm still working on it.
Okay, let's
take a call. He's more elusive out of the ring than he is in the ring.
Let's take a call really quick, man, and then you'll let me know when he's on. Let's go with Scott, who wants to talk Angulo Kirtland. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, what's up, fellas? Thanks for taking my call, man.
Hey, no problem, brother. How you doing?
I'll just make a couple quick points. I know we got a little time crunch here, but, you know, a couple points that I wanted to make about that Kirtland Angulo fight is, you know, obviously it was a ton of fun to watch, and thank God Golden Boy did send him down there to sacrifice him, because we wouldn't have had that fight without it.
Actually, we got to thank Amador Olsen for not taking that fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, exactly. The Twitter champion of the world.
Yeah, man. But go ahead and make your point.
Yeah, but for as good as a fight as that was, and it is with a popular Mexican in it, and being in Mexico, the crowd seemed so stale. And I don't know if it was just because it was like that, or just because the miking was so bad, but it just seemed like the atmosphere was really dull for a fight that was, you know, that kind of fan friendly.
You know, that microphone problem that they were having, even like Michael Buffer's face, you see it, he was like kind of like, man, I don't even know what to do anymore. So I don't know if we were able to really capture the sound of what was going on in the crowd. But do we got Kirtland, brother?
Yes, we do. I'm back with James Kirtland, who has arguably the round of the year and the fight that everybody and their brother is talking about right now. Welcome to the show, James.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, James, how you doing, man?
No, nothing much. Just feel blessed, you know.
Let's get right to it, man. Talk to me a little bit about what it was like, you know. And I joked to Dave about this. If I had to pick two people to invade Mexico, it would be you and Ann Wolf. What was it like to go down to Mexico? You guys don't speak Spanish. You're surrounded by strangers. Was there a sense that you were sent in a way to lose? And what was your mindset approaching this fight?
First, I want to give thanks to Kyle for this whole opportunity, this situation, just being able to talk about the whole nine. But as far as me getting sent down there to Cancun, Mexico for this fight, I knew I was just set in for the loss. I knew it was one of those situations that as far as I had to not just prove myself but save my career at the same time. As far as going down there, but nobody knew how to speak English, and me going down not knowing how to speak Spanish, and just the whole vibe, you can tell that it wasn't not good for me, knowing that it was like one of those situations like, hey, I'm here to lose. Everybody's knowing to saying, hey, yeah, he's going to lose, and you got the people's parents and different people talking to you like, hey, loser, and everybody just got
wow.
That mind frame of you being an outer.
It was that straight up? People were just in your face like, hey, you're going to lose?
It basically just like, you know, they want to take pictures with you and say, yeah, well, you're one of those people that's going to try, and you know, much luck to you. And those type of and that type of vibe. At the same time, man, like I tell a lot of people, man, I trained the hardest of my whole career for this fight. You know, Angulo, he's a real, real strong fighter. He comes to show people a good fight, and he comes to bring the pain. And at the same time, I'm built the same way, or tough. So. It's amazing, man.
Did you get that sense from the media, too? I mean, I was on that conference call with you, you know, and it seemed like everybody was asking Angulo questions. I think myself and maybe two other writers asked you anything. Did you just get a sense like everybody's kind of against you, and was that fuel for you?
I knew. I'm not going to put everybody that was against me out there. Because it's like, damn, wow, you say them, these people too? But it was just the way it is, man. You know, you just, right is wrong is wrong. And everybody was against me when it came for me being an outer, meaning that the loser. You're going to lose. And Fred Angulo and Alvarez, that's the fight that everybody wants to see. That's the one that they try to set up for them the death of that to be the match, but they counted Kirkland out, not knowing that when I tell people about the Shida fight, they look at that, so he's just saying it because he lost. No, I was saying it because the truth, and I got, but the fact is, I still lost, even though the truth, you know, is what it is. I still lost, you know, and but I trained for this fight like I do any other fight. But I put my all into it because I know Fred Angulo is the same type of fighter I am. He's coming. You don't have to look for him. You don't have to go searching and asking, where is he going to be at? He's in your face, and he's coming to fight. So we trained for that. You know, we had 10, 12, 13 other sparring partners. A lot, some of them stay. Some can go two rounds. Some can go four. But the majority of the time, a lot of them left. But a lot of them stay. I mean, a lot of people stay. We had a bunch of fights in the gym. Some I won, some I lost in the sparring. But one thing I knew, when the training camp was over and it was time to fight and the time to make the weight, I knew I was 100% prepared for the fight. Even though everybody counted me out and said, no, and I go down there and all the boxing people, the media, a lot of people just, Kirkland can't do it. I have Fred Angulo knocking him out in two rounds. And I have him doing this and have him doing that. He counted me out a long time ago.
Right. James, let's talk about that first round, you know. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about the game plan going into this fight with Angulo here. In that first round, it looked like we were going to get the same James Kirkland. Come forward, be super aggressive, and push the guy back. But then you got dropped with the right hand. When you got dropped with that right hand and you got back up, did the game plan kick in at that moment that you were derailing away from what originally you were supposed to do, which is box with aggression?
No, like when I tell people that how it started off, they're like, man, why is this? It seemed like he started you. No, when I got hit with the right hand. boom, I go down. The right hand didn't hurt me at all. But after the fact, when he started trying to apply the pressure after I got knocked down,
mm-hmm.
he missed a lot of shots. I caught a lot of shots on my arms, and I moved my head back a little bit, and him catching me a little bit, and none of that stuff hurt. The only thing that hurt it was when he went to the body. Once I say that man went to the body, I tried to grab him. But the body shot's the only thing that hurt me in that particular whole concept of that first round. And then when they say, when a lot of people say, I think he might throw himself out. He might get a little windy. He might do all he had, and all he was mostly moved. I just didn't get over anxious. I didn't throw any unnecessary punches. I called a lot of shots. So I just stuck to the game plan. And then when I go down, and then when I start applying the pressure and start going back and start tapping him and catching him, and he goes down. Now what I see in my head at that particular moment is imano imano, meaning one-on-one. You got
right.
one, and I got one. And then I told Ann Wolf that what I was going to do was try to box him for 3 rounds or press him for like 3 rounds and then start the boxing and start touching him here, touching him there. So I wanted to let everybody know I can box too. So that was my game plan, was to dog him out for 3 rounds and then just box him. Press him, box him, just touch, move, touch, catch, and that was the game plan. And it just went all out the roof. As soon as that happened, I said, you know what? We gave these people who want to see a fight, they come to see it, and me and him the same type of fighter, let's get them what they want. And we started
right.
off early. It started off right off the rip, going right into that mode.
Absolutely. You know, let me ask you this, because Angulo's been known to be a really heavy-handed guy and kind of a slow starter. When he came out, you guys, that first round was just it was the set of the pace. When did you feel, though, that those punches started to lose steam? And when did you feel, okay, they lost steam, now I can put a little bit more pressure on him?
No, when we first started off and we first started exchanging shots, that's before I got hit with the right hand, I was telling myself, I thought he was a harder puncher than what I'm getting. But then I realized, I say, man, I did a whole bunch of sparring, going 16 rounds every other day. So I go 16 rounds, skip a day, 16 rounds, skip a day, 16 rounds. And we kept doing it every day. I have
wow.
a brand new, some sparring partners go 6. A fresh one to come back in, another 6. Another fresh one to come back in, 6. And that's how we would do it. And when he caught with a couple of shots, I was like, man, I thought this dude had a lot harder than this. But I said, oh, man, this is going to be a piece of cake. So I start pressing. I start walking him down. Boom, I get caught with the right hand. I go down. So, boom, I wasn't starting from the right hand. I was when a person say, not just cut off balance, but I go down. No matter how it looks, I go down. I get back up. He tries to plow the pressure. I catch a lot of shots. And I start when that steam goes out, and I start just touch, moving my head just a little here, a little there, make them try to miss shots. Everything starts falling into play, falling into what I want, and it worked out right.
How much do you think fighting, you know, this is your 6th fight this year. How much do you think fighting that often, even with that loss, did that play into this? How sharp it made you?
No, the only thing that played real sharp for this fight is I trained. And I mean, I trained so hard where I had to pray to God and ask him some days, I need you to help me to wake up and help me to be able to move, because when it comes to an Ann Wolf training camp, you never, never know what to expect in the morning. You may think that, hey, man, this is going to be a run here, a run there. No, you may be pulling, you may have bulletproof vests on. You may be getting hit with hammers in the stomach. You may be, it's crime. You never know what you're going to get when you come out of training camp. So every day it's like, wow. Then then you don't want to miss out because you're so motivated to go and push and push. So you can't sleep because you never know what time you get that knock on the door. You got to be up and ready to get ready to take off and go do your thing. So it was super hard for this training camp. And you can just tell just from the endurance, the amount of punches I threw and how amp and ready I was to just keep going and go and go. And it felt fun. It was good, and I enjoyed the fight.
Without a doubt, if there's one woman on the planet that I don't want knocking on my window, it's Ann Wolf. You know, that's just...
Yeah.
How hammers to the stomach? Are you serious?
Yeah, she oh, that's man. The build that that stomach is just stable. You know, you get your stomach broke down, and then it starts to heal back up, and she breaks it back down. But at the same time, you're doing abs every day, every. You're not missing a day, not missing a beat. And then she put that hammer to her. She might skip a day, maybe skip 2 days. So you never know when she's going to say, oh, here it goes. Here goes this pound to pound.
Your
like,
abs never,
possibly,
James.
But, wow.
Have your abs ever stopped you and go, James, what are you doing to me, man? What did I do to you, man? Stop this, please.
what your body does, my body, it always kicks into a new gear. Some like this fight right here, my body kicked into a gear that it has never been in before as far as endurance and being in shape-wise. I actually ran like a jackrabbit every morning. And I was like, man, this is too many miles. I mean, like, please stop running mountains, like, and this was every single day. So it's like your legs seem to get supposed to be getting used to it, but it's like it's wear and tear and wear and tear. You're like, man, it's impossible for my legs to be going through this type of suffering. But it really worked out for the best.
Now, after the fight, Canelo apparently started talking, you know, and you've never been a guy that talks trash or talks bad about an opponent or calls people out, but he was calling you out and basically saying he could beat you and Angulo on the same day. What do you think about that?
Like they say, a lot of people say, talk is cheap. I can actually jump up and grab a star out of the sky, and if you believe it, you believe it. You know what I'm saying? So I just say, man, you know, I hear that he says he wants that fight, he wants that type of tension, he wants to get that on. I'm the type of person that says, if you want it, prove you want it. You know, I'm not gonna get loud with him. I'm not gonna say, oh man, I could take you out in 2 rounds, 3 rounds, because people know what I can do. They know what I'm capable of doing. They know what I like, and I like a fight, and that's what I plan to do. So, if a man says he can do what he wants to do and say he's ready for me, or he's ready for, I don't even think he's ready for Angulo, like Fredo Angulo, he's really. Really a pound-for-pound good fighter, you know, and I just that day, and, you know, I was very, very in the best shape of my life, and I just want to not just prove to myself, but just prove to my fans that I'm still here and still alive, and maybe he overlooked me. Maybe he didn't train the hard as he's supposed to train because he overlooked me. But that night was a special night for me and him to give it all. And we did, and I came out to be the one, 6-round stoppage.
I got to say, man, I mean, hearing you, everything that you're saying right now, James, it's just, you just made yourself even more of a special fighter in my eyes, in my opinion. When I hear you talk so humble about your win and saying that Angulo, maybe he didn't train hard enough, but it was that special night. Like, you didn't take anything away from anybody. Do you think that, because at the time when you came out in the scene, you were a very scary figure. With the Ishida thing, everybody looked at it like, okay, he's not the guy. Everything is gone. It's back to what it used to be. Do you think you re-scared the 154 division again?
I'm not trying to scare it. I'm trying to shock it, meaning that the people in the 154 weight class, I want y'all, look at the Shida fight. Kirkland, don't look at the Angulo fight. Look at the Shida fight. Look at O.E. Kirkland. Keep that on your mind. Dream about it. Dread for it. Think that it can happen again. To believe in it. Like a Nike check. Just do it. when it comes to Kirkland, I'm nowhere near, like I said, a Shida fight. That is a fight that I dread to see. It'll never happen again because I'm never going to allow myself to get put in that position. And I would never allow myself not to train, not to allow myself to do things that I did to put myself not at my full potential. And then at the same time, I'm not 100% got my timing down because that's anybody. You're doing something that you know how to do, and then you go somewhere else and try to do the same thing and have somebody teaching you something new and then try to come out there and perfect and do what you know how to do. I promise you, I can guarantee you, your timing is not going to be 100% there. And if you're not, your time. And with the sheet of fire, I look at it over and over. I'm up there making turn moves when a person's not even throwing. I said, now what was I thinking when I was doing that?
Right.
And I left my chin in my face wide open, baseball shots. And imagine you can hit from the side of your face and you got your face wide open, your hands down, and your face, and somebody's on the side of your face and they throwing a 1-2 as hard as they possibly can. You're telling me I got to have a glass chin or I got to have a glass jaw. I got a weak chin to get startled or get knocked down because I was sitting sideways, got cracked, 1-2 straight down the pipe. You can't have a glass chin. Anybody can close your eyes and hit the stronger man dead in the mouth. I promise you, he's gonna feel every bit of it. He's gonna touch all 10 toes.
Right.
I take nothing from Ashita. He won that night fair and square. Down goes Kirkland first round. I'm out for the count and I lose. I tell you one thing, it won't happen again. It won't. You see what happened with Joel Hu. I mean, you see what happened with Fredo Angulo. Me and him exchanged super hard shots.
Right.
Then startled, then dazed me, and we're still going pound for pound. Let's show the world what we're capable of doing. And that's what we gave the world that night. A great fight, gave the fans what they want to see, an action fight, a real fight, a real boxing match. And that's what I like about the fight. Anytime I look at the fight and I say, man, you know what? That is something I can look at over and over and over again because it's something that I like to see action.
Right.
We gave
action.
The whole entire sixth round.
I tell you, Saturday night was like going to church, man, for a boxing fan. That first round, you had everybody standing up, the both of you guys, hands up in the air. And just in a trance, you know. James, let me ask you, how did you feel seeing that the people that promote you, everybody was on the other side of the ring, and it was only you, Pops, and Amwolf on one corner? What was there anything added for yourself in motivation, seeing that your supposed team was pretty much putting you out there to lose?
Oh, I knew I was put out to lose. I knew it. But this is the only thing that beats all the odds. Train. When you train as hard as I train, that's one thing I kept telling people. I don't care if everybody's on your side. I don't care if you bring 100 dogs in the ring and they bark loud and they whistle and howl the Star Standard Banner. I don't care what you may do. It's all good and gravy. But it's only going to be two people in the ring. You can have 100 people in the entourage and your whole team, and they growl and they say cuss words. They get all crazy. That's cool. I like that. That's nice. But at the end of the day, it's only two people going to be in the ring, me and you. So
right.
While everybody's I'm in top shape. I don't know how a person trains for they fight. But I know when I put my all in something, I'm going all the way. I'm going all the way. And that's how I felt. So when I take that fall, I took a lot of punches in spawn. Took a lot, gave a lot. So when that happens, with me getting hit, it's okay. I get back up, but I stick to my game. I don't lose, and I don't overthrow no unnecessary shots, falling off balance, falling into a bunch of shots. I keep my feet down, planted, moving. Which sometimes I fall off balance coming inside, I back out, start boxing, just to get my distance, get my punching range back into order. Thinking smartly, but at the same time I say, God's good, man. I just trained super good for the fight. All the odds were against me. A lot of people were against me. But even the people back home, they were, oh, man, Kirkland going down in 2. He going down in 5. And I said, wow. Let me go down in 5. Let me go down in 2. It's all peaches and cream. But they don't know what I've been through in training camp because I've been hid. I've been out there in Bastrop just me by myself and my sparring partners. People come in. Some sparring partners can stay. Some of them fly back home, hurt. But at the same time, man, I did whatever it took for me to be able to win as far as in the training part. And then when it came down for the fight, I just told myself and told, I'm going to die in this ring before I let this man beat me. And that's what happened. I just gave it all.
Looking back at the year, you know, September 2010, you get released. You go through these 6 fights. You have a loss, and then you reunite with Ann. And 3 fights later, you're here on the show talking about this great win. What are your thoughts on that? Just looking back at all you've been through, really through your life, but through this last year, what does that feel like?
It's amazing because one thing I noticed and I learned out of everything. You have to go through something to say you've been through it. You know, I can't tell a person, hey, man, to stay away from these people, man, because these people are no good for you. I can say it, but, you know, for me not to go through it or been through it, how can I say it? So me going through the situation that I've been through, I learned a lot. I learned about people, learned about friends, I learned about hard situations, and how to stay focused, how to keep your game plan intact when times seem like there's no way. And that's what happened. I learned to overcome and to stay and follow my dream no matter what. And so when the chips were down and they see me out and everybody's like, Kirkland can't be that leader, he can't be that fighter no more. He's no longer a power puncher, as a lot of people say, and everything starts to go that way because I train to do the best of the best and give it my all. And when the situation happens, when the man goes down and he's out for the count, the referee stops the fight, it's an inner feeling that you get that you can't even explain. I can't even express to say that everything was against me. And me, my trainers, have to overcome and say, you did it when everybody was against you. It's just like what they say, it's priceless. Oh, and it feels good.
Looking ahead, do you think you need that Ishida fight, or is it title shot time? And if he moves into position, then you can fight him again.
And at this time right now, they can put anybody in front of me. But mind frame right now is the title shot. You know, I work myself to that era. Work myself to that point. To that's what I want. And then later on in the time of boxing, when it's right, the right time is right. Me and that Sheila, we'll do that thing again. We'll dance again. And I would definitely be on my A game and definitely be back to the right person I need to be, and not making careless and mistakes and stupid decisions when you're not 100% prepared. So we'll definitely get that fight on, but at the time right now, I'm looking for that world title shot.
Yeah, I think it's about time, you know, and just for me, you know, I don't, I'm sure Dave has another question, but just personal note, man, you know, I saw you, you know, you, the, we've, I've covered you since, what, 2006. I saw you on that, that undercard in Vegas, and watching you Saturday night, I said to myself, this is who I saw and went, I got to follow this guy. He's going to be a star, and he's going to be what I thought he was going to be. And the Ishida fight, all that stuff really threw me for a loop. I didn't know what was going on until later. And I'm very happy for you, man. Just seeing you and Ann embrace in the ring like that, and you screaming on the ring post. It was just for me as a fight fan, and as a writer now, you know, I've been writing the same time covering you. This is why I do what I do, and you keep me doing what I'm doing, and it's just inspirational.
All right, I'm more than likely. I appreciate it to the most. I thank you, deadly. I do, you know, and I. There's a lot of things that people don't know, man. I put God in my life, and I really sit down and I stay focused and I stay prayed up, man. Asking for extra strength and just to get through the training camp, just to be able to keep me humble and focused, no matter what, through the boxing or without the boxing, and you know, and it just worked out to the best of my ability and the. To work up the best for my boxing, for my kids, the whole nine, and now it just set a foundation. Just it just set up for the future to where I really don't have to wish and hope. It's gonna come, you know. It's like it's destined.
Yeah.
You know, James, I got it. Yeah, congratulate you too, man. It was just a phenomenal fight. Really quick though, before I let you go, and you know, and you can. Continue with your family and all that. Just to clear it up, because a lot of fight fans always want to know. Twitter, is that you on Twitter?
I honestly, I want to let everybody know this. I don't have a Twitter page. I honestly don't even really get on the internet. I look at Google. I mean, I look at YouTube to check out some of my old fights and check out some of. Marvin Hagler old fights and Mayweather fights and different things like that. But when it comes down to this Twitter and Facebook, I know Facebook is pretty cool because there's a lot of people on that type of thing. And they say they got Facebook for, like, fan pages and stuff, which is cool. But Twitter, I don't even know what a Twitter page is. I know it's something with
right.
Boxes. I heard from a different type of person asked me, they said, I'm cutting other fighters out. I'm telling them, let's do this and let's fight tomorrow and today and afterwards. And I'm like, man, I don't even have a Twitter page. I don't even know nothing about Twitter. I don't know what Twitter is. I know it's something where someone talks about somebody else and somebody talks about next man. That's all I got from the next reporter who asked me something like that. I don't have a Twitter page. I'm sorry if y'all have it confused or y'all think it's me. I don't do all that talking crap to anybody or
right.
Trying to make myself look bigger and better than somebody. I'm an average dude, this humble man. Then God took over my life. But when it comes to a fight and we want to fight each other or somebody has an opportunity to fight me, that's what I got matchmakers for. I don't me arguing saying I'm better than the next man and this and that. It's no, we can fight. Just let the matchmaker do. I don't know nothing about a Twitter page. People tell me something about fighter says, man, I'm Kirkland and don't know. I called Kirkland out a long time ago. No, you didn't call me out. You called Twitter out. I don't know Twitter. I don't know nothing about it, but it's the Twitter thing going on, and I apologize if you're thinking that it's me saying somebody pretending to be me. Hey, he got you fooled. April
Fools,
I guess. I don't know.
April Fools, man. Well, James, man, I can tell you this right now. Whoever's portraying you on Twitter, that's as close as they're going to get in portraying you because I don't think anybody can clone a James Kirtland, not now or anytime soon. Brother, thank you again for that fantastic fight. We wish you the best and enjoy everything down to Christmas to New Year's, man, with your family, brother.
All right, most definitely. Appreciate it, and God bless.
Back at you, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Well, there you go, fight fans. James Kirtland on leaving in the ring. If you didn't have a chance to hear the whole interview, we had Angulo earlier. We had the head trainer Manny for LA Matadors on. We had the challenger, the mandatory challenger for Eric Morales. I'm not going to even try to attempt his name. Josie, something like that. It was on here on Leaving the Ring. I think you chopped up his name first than I did when it came on, but that's all right, though. We chop everybody's name up here on Leaving the Ring, man. It's just, when you come on.
Yeah.
But, man, a lot of things he said, I got to tell you, really humble. And I think grateful at the same time that he got this win. But I like what he had to say. Look, you know, it could have been an off night for him, but I was a better man. And if he wants to do it again, let's do it again. He's not opposed to it. He's willing to fight anybody. He's just a guy that wants to fight. And that's, man, that's just, you know, one word about Kirtland. How could you describe him in one word? Fighter. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
You know,
I wasn't always crazy about the nickname Mandingo Warrior.
Right.
And the more I've watched him fight, the more it's just, I remember Ann describing it to me. I was like, where did that nickname come from? And she's like, that's because he fights, you know, in that style. He's going to come to conquer. And you know what? It really does. It does fit him. And I wish we could clone him, you know, because we need more guys that are just very humble like that, but also just willing to give it all, you know, just to give it up for the fight fans. And just that, you know, there's a million things a fighter could think when he gets dropped, you know. Oh, God, it's the Ishida fight again, or, oh, man, you know, I screwed up. This guy's too much. All James was thinking was, fight fans wanted a fight? Well, here we go.
You got to fight.
That's just awesome. That's just awesome. And I know some people will say, oh, you're biased, or you shouldn't be giving personal kudos to a guy like that. But to me, you know, I think why I'm so tied to the guy is, like I said, it was the first time I covered a fight in Vegas. He was the first guy I saw. And I very much kind of tie what I do and why I do what I do to a guy like that. You know, why shouldn't I? You know, it was inspirational, dude. I was screaming in my apartment here watching the fight alone and, you know, on TV and just going, wow, this is. And for both guys, you know, I was just like, wow, this is...
I was standing in front of the TV,
special.
In front of everybody, and kicking people off. They were telling me to move. But I was in the zone. I'm telling you, Gabe, I was wearing boxing gloves, dude, with the beer. Holding the beer with my boxing glove, you know? Hey, listen, really quick, we're going to be playing the interview that we did on, I believe it was Monday, right? Monday or Tuesday, we did it with Ann Wolf. When she came on to speak to us, and we're going to be playing that for everybody. But I guess we should do our breakdown and our pick for this Saturday on pay per view. Manny Pacquiao versus Juan Manuel Marquez. Gabe, go really quick, brother. Who's your pick and what you think?
Pacquiao went 8. It's typical pay per view fight. They got him at the right time. They got him at the right weight. Marquez is 38. You know, maybe Memo Heredia can help him out, but to make him last a little long. But I think Manny gets him out of there in 8. That's why it's happening now.
You know, the thing is, though, whatever Memo's doing, you can make your body look fantastic, but your chin's always going to be your chin. There's no changing that. There's no way of making that any sturdier than what it is, or his legs, making him more mobile. I say it's going to go pretty good for 4 rounds, 5 rounds. I think Marquez is going to come in with a completely different kind of game plan. Like I said, I don't know, for some reason, something's telling me the bulking up is to make it into a war, have Manny stand and trade with them. I think it's a bad idea. But then again, you got to look at everything about his skill level. It has dropped a notch or so because of age. It doesn't have the youth anymore. So I got 4 for Manny. Hey, Lucian Bute had his win over Glenn Johnson. The reason why I haven't really talked about it, because it was just a win. You know, fought an older guy that definitely looked like an older guy stepping in the ring. Peter Quillen had his win. But who stole the show? Angulo and Kirtland. So this is Leaving the Ring. Let's play that interview that everybody's been waiting patiently to hear from Ann Wolf and what she has to say about Saturday night and her fighter.
Dan, I'm here with my co-host, Gabe Duenas, and This is Leave It in the Ring. We're here with world-class trainer of James Kirkland, Ann Wolf. Welcome to the show, Ann.
Hello. Thank you.
Dave, why don't you start off?
Okay. Obviously, Ann, everybody had written off James Kirkland because of that whole Shida loss. But I guess nobody took account of that. He had never lost with you on his corner. How refreshing was it to prove to everybody, you see, this is what I was telling you guys when he wasn't with me. He wasn't right. Now he's with me. He's back on track.
I won't just say that because he wasn't with me. Number one, I wasn't in the corner, so I don't know how to lose with James Kirkland. And if I ever did lose with him, it's going to be that type of battle. Number two, James Kirkland has never lost when he weighed 154 pounds. He's never lost to the junior middleweight because he has to train to get all the way down to junior middleweight. If he moves up to 160, I'm going to have to bulk him up, and then you have to do a certain amount of training to get down to the weight that you need to be at. It's just I never talk shit, I never say nothing, but so many people, I mean, I've never felt like so many people just not even didn't think he could win, didn't want him to win.
What do you mean that people didn't want? What do you mean by that?
You know,
that people didn't want to win.
This is what I think of some people look at. Mm-hmm. All this is just a kid from the street. He's a thug. He's no good. He don't. And you know, he can't do it. You know, and then the boxing scene is going a different way. It's not going toward. It's going toward the Hispanic side. Not saying it's a bad thing that it's going that way because mm-hmm. Hispanic people. When I went to Mexico, one thing I can say, the local people treated us good. Hispanic people are like I am. I like fights. I like to see fights. And the reason it's going toward the Hispanic way is because a lot of other people, they more in tune to basketball, football, and MMA and dropped in. And boxing is losing everything that it had, everything that made boxing boxing. That you could be a poor person. You didn't have to have a degree. You didn't have to go to college. And you still can make it in boxing. Boxing is the real American dream because you don't have to have nothing and still can make it in boxing.
Right, right.
And so it's like, to me, I really felt like people was like, he don't deserve to win. He can't win. And just because he couldn't win, then, oh, well. But y'all don't count me out. Don't count Ann Wolf out. Don't count me out.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about that first round. I mean, that round, I would have to say, I put in the books of round of the year. But when he gets dropped, Kirkland, and he was putting on the pressure on Angulo, he gets dropped with that right hand. But, you know, this time he got up, he was hurt. You could see it in his face, he was hurt when he was trying to collect himself. What were you thinking?
Okay, once he got dropped not because of his defense. He got dropped because Angulo is a top boxer, and he shook over, and then James was coming to throw, and he was going to throw. And Angulo threw the perfect short, straight right hand. It wasn't even straight because it was so short you couldn't tell if it was straight or not. When James went down, I knew he got hit with a real live junior middleweight Angulo type punch, a puncher's punch. But I knew deep down in my heart, I said, James in shape. So when he went down, I heard a lot of people said, I told you so. I told you, I knew it. I heard somebody behind say, I knew it. But then I looked at James, and when he got up and he shrugged his shoulders, I said, it's on. When he got up, if you go back and look at the fight, he kind of shrugged his shoulders. So once he shrugged his shoulders, I knew it. And then I wasn't scared because in training camp, I made him fight 10 rounds, and then I made him fight 4 rounds. And then the next 4, he was so tired, he was like, man, I can't go no more shit. I done went 14. I said, we're going 18. In the last 4 rounds, he was tired like he was. It looked like the same exact thing that Angulo did to him. That's how it was in training camp. And one of the other sparring partners was like, he's gonna get hurt. I said, if he get hurt, then we'll stay here. And he blocked the same way because the kid was throwing on him. I said, I'm going to send you home if you don't try to knock him out. Knock him out. And James blocked the same exact way because that same thing happened in training camp. The same exact thing. And guess what happened? I said, once James, I wanted him to hold him more. But once I seen the uppercut come, boom, and I seen little short, crisp punches coming in between, I said, he's going to get him. He's going to catch him. He's going to catch him. I knew he was going to catch him. And I punch myself out, bull crap. I don't want to hear that shit.
Right.
You punch yourself out. I think you could punch yourself out for that round, for that one round, and then you take the next round off or whatever. How you going to punch yourself? I don't believe in that. That means you ain't doing bad work.
Right.
If you know that that might happen to you, then get your ass on the bag and punch the bag until you throw up or fall out. I don't believe in punching myself out. I don't believe in that.
That's one of the things, you know, people look at the fight and they look at, you know, his chin, and he gets dropped in the first round. He's down in the first round against Ishida and Conyers. And they and then they say he's not a skilled guy. Do you think that they equate the chin with his defense? Because I was actually very impressed with the defense and watching the fight again. They say Angulo punched himself out, but he made him miss.
I don't question his chin, because I feel like, just like you said, James is a come get it. Let's get with it. So when you're coming to get with it, you get hit too. So when you come, okay, so does Angulo have a chin? He got dropped in the first round.
Right.
I don't give a damn what circumstances, whatever. So what? Because he'll come on, get it fighter. But he has never fought somebody that's going to come on with him. James Kirkland's chin is well enough to be do what he needs to do. His defense is well enough what he needs to, because then he showed glimpses of defense. He showed some defense when he needed to. I said, now show him a little defense, back up off of him, use your jab. I said, he's going to get desperate and he's going to run into something. Then I said, okay, he ain't going nowhere, just wait. Put some, use his speed on his ass. Put some speed on him. I said, now put some pressure on him. And how he got the, he's going to show more defense when he needs to show it. But guess what? People that's paying their money, I wanted my money back when I watched these last two fights.
Right.
I literally want to call the people and say, look, I need my money back. I don't look at boxing as tap, 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 this, this, this. Now, I think if you got a tapper in there, that somebody's just going to be tapping, 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 he's fighting a slugger, he's supposed to do that, so I can see that. But people are tired of seeing that bullshit. People want to see you fight. You've been paid a lot of money, so get in there and fight. And that's what I tell James. We're going to give the people exactly what they want to see. We didn't go into a backyard. We went into somebody's house. We went somewhere where we were being cheated. We went somewhere where nobody was on our side. No one. Everybody, if you go back and watch the fight, only me, Pops, and James, and the cut man was in our corner. His corner looked like you couldn't even, everyone. I'm not going to say no names, but everybody was in his corner. Everyone. People ask me, oh, how do you feel going up against Nacho, whatever his name is? I was like, I don't care if I'm going up against King Kong. If you prepared, it don't matter. When my mother and my dad died, I used to have to wonder how I was going to eat. I used to have to wonder where I was going to get food for my sisters and brothers. I used to have to wonder if I get in a fight, if I'm walking these streets all in the middle of the night. When I sold drugs, I had to say, listen, you don't pay me my money, I'm breaking your arm. That just was life. It wasn't that I was proud of selling drugs. That's all I knew how to do.
Do you like the...
Once I figured out you go to jail if you sell drugs, I stopped selling drugs. I haven't even got a traffic ticket in 22 years.
Right. Do you like the odds against you? And, I mean, does that make it just that much more for motivation on your guys' part?
No. I don't care if I'm finna fight a squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that squirrel might jump up and scratch out my eyes. Anybody with two hands and 2 feet like you can whoop your ass. And as soon as you don't realize that, you're going to get beat. I don't care if they came and told me James was going to fight somebody 10 and 10. We're going through the same exact training camp. I don't want to hear that. I don't believe in no tune-ups. I don't believe in none of that. That's just how I am. I don't know why my mom made me like that. Whatever you do, you don't underestimate. It goes to say if a rich man came to my house with $1 million in his pocket and a poor man came to my house with $1 in his pocket, I want to sit both of them at the same table. I'm going to feed them the same food. I'm going to give them the same thing to drink. So if we fight somebody that got 1,000 fights or we fight somebody that got one fight, I'm going to prepare for them the same way that I prepare for anybody else. I'm going to respect that man is a boxer.
They showed on HBO, you know, James living in the shed in the back, or the little house back there. Mm-hmm. Was he? do you do that for all your fighters? Is that something special for this fight?
No, usually like the time before, we had a little house where we all went, and we all stayed in a little old house in a bed, and it's not about, you know, as long as we can all, we didn't have training camp at my house before. I have a decent house. It's just isolating the fighter, bringing them by itself, and this is how I tell James, if you have $1 million, you still James Kirkland. You know where you come from. If we have to sleep, and you know, just that's where it was at. It don't matter. We ain't here to fight. If they could take me and put me in the best luxury hotel, I'ma still come out with the same thing because we here to fight. We isolated. We don't want to be around a whole bunch of crap. But you know, it don't matter where we go to train. We giving 100%. No matter where we go. Not that I have to put him in that, but it kept him away from everybody. You know, here you go over here, you go over here, and I don't want no shit. When I get here, when I knock on that window, let's get up, let's get going. And he has never, people go, James can't win without him. Let me tell you, James wants to win too. James put in a lot of work too. James put his heart and his soul in too. He had to be disciplined to stay there, and it's not like I got a holler scream. I don't do hardly no hollering, no screaming, no get the, no. I'm more like, do you want to get knocked out on TV with your children watching?
James, to me, is arguably the most exciting fighter out there right now. Maybe Manny Pacquiao is probably right there. He's been doing it longer, and his fights are certainly exciting. But there's something about James's vulnerability that he gets knocked down and still fights through it that makes him special. Do you think people are too critical of that, that he gets knocked down?
He's a throwback. You know what a throwback is? Not too many. Nowadays, these furry-ass fighters, which I'm not going to say they're all furry, but these fighters, they get hit one time, and their whole career is over. The throwback fighters, you can hit them son of a guns. Look what happened to Joe Louis. Look how he got brutally knocked out and got up and just act crazy.
Right.
That's true. I mean, people forget that.
If you're going to give it, you got to be know how to take it. You get knocked down because you're standing there trying to trade, then get your ass up and let's get with it.
Trinidad got knocked down like 9 times before he faced De La Hoya. It's the great ones that get back up, but that's really the key to me.
I don't worry about none of that stuff. I think if James is in shape, you don't have to worry about much of that.
Let's talk a little bit about the preparation, sparring and all that. How much did you guys do? What did you, you know, I don't know if you want to give away your secrets or anything, but.
Not really, but I can tell you one thing. We sparred almost 200 rounds.
Do you worry that will shorten his career, having him spar
no.
and prepare that much?
No, because when we went to the gym, the way Pops trained us, when he was young, we sparred every day 10 rounds. We walked in the gym, Pops said 10 rounds on a bag, 10 rounds on a mitt, 10 rounds on a tool bag, 10 rounds on a speed rag, and 10 rounds on sparring.
Building them how they used to build them, basically.
Yeah, slaves' lives weren't short when they picked cotton all day. Your body grows immune to it.
That's true. I mean, to me, like, seeing his body.
It's like the old fighters. Nowadays, you name me a fighter that can have over 100 fights. They can't do it because their bodies and their structure and they don't eat and work the same way. You have fighters that will go fight a fight and then go to work. Then fight a fight 3 days later. Look at Sugar Ray Robinson.
Yeah, they just don't do it. Like, people were amazed that James Toney had like 73 or close to 80 fights, you know, at this point in his career. It's a rarity anymore.
I know. I mean, people forget that you know, Sugar Ray Robinson fought 4 times in 1 month, you know?
That's how James is. That's what he can do. I guarantee you can fight James again in 3 weeks.
Really? You didn't really take much damage.
If he did, you could fight him in 3 weeks. We spar hard every day. And
right.
then the next week we spar hard. I mean, it ain't going to shorten nothing. It ain't going to shorten nothing as long as. You see, what happens is these fighters go and they take off 4 months and they eat and they sleep with women and they parlay and they don't do nothing.
Right.
And that's why when they come back, it's just, I don't understand. I just, you know, I see my uncles, my brothers, everybody I know, they work from the time that we start working in my family from the time you can walk. You haul puff wood, you haul rice, you walk rice levees. And my uncle, I can remember, he every bit of 65. And you wouldn't have never thought it because he walked behind a mule from sun up to sundown.
Right. And let me ask you this, because nowadays in the sport, when you look fantastic and you're in top shape, like, you know, Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao, accusations are always thrown out there about, what do you think about that? What do you think about fighters that have to use enhancements to get themselves up for a fight?
Man, fool, that's crap. I mean, you know, if that's what you want to do, I don't, you know what I'm saying? I heard that people were saying James' gloves were loaded. He had to be on some. He was on beans and rice. That's all he was on. You don't need none of that. You need some beans and rice and some food and to train every day on a daily basis and train all the time and take care of your body and go to sleep and don't stay in the streets. I'm 40 years old and I still train every day.
Somebody's asking me, did Leila Ali duck Ann Wolf? And I said, absolutely. I think you're probably still in the shape that you could take her right now. You'd still take that fight, I imagine.
Yeah, Leila Ali definitely. But you know what? I'm past that. That's why I started doing this, because I'm not saying nothing bad about female boxing. I'm just saying it, once I went to the top, it's like my head was on the roof and I couldn't go nowhere, do nothing. And there was no challenges for me. So I said, where else can I get a challenge? Because I'm a warrior. I like to fight. I like to see fighting. I like to be around fighting. And it was, see how far I can go in a male-dominated sport.
Right.
I'm the only female ever been chief second on HBO. And it's my third time.
Do you think there's also that? Is because you're a woman, they kind of look at James and say, how can you succeed? Because he's got this female trainer? Or do you think now the proof is in the pudding?
Guess what? I have whole teams. I have, like, sometimes I have amateur teams with 15, and they used to say that, and I come back with 13 golds, 2 silvers, and they'd be like, shh. I went from being a woman to being an animal.
Right.
You know, I don't think that even the woman deal even, you know, because you heard Ann Wolf about 30 times Saturday night.
Right.
You never heard a woman, not one time. So they passed that.
One of the most telling comments I thought was picture perfect was, this isn't a Nacho Berrestain fight. This is an Ann Wolf fight. Do you think that the people are going to be able to deal, you know, like when you try to prepare for a Pacquiao, it's hard to find a guy with speed and power. When you prepare for a Floyd Mayweather, it's hard to find a guy to spar with that has those kind of skills. Do you think it's going to be hard for people to find somebody that can do the kind of pressure you do?
That's one of the things I felt comfortable about that gave me more confidence, because I was like, I want to see what power, pressure, cooking, southpaw they're going to find that's going to get him prepared for what we're going to do to him. Not even a 60-pounder or a 75-pounder. Mm-hmm. You name me one, because by the time you get to 75, they got the power, they don't have the speed and the calm and the quickness. You go lower, I mean, how can you get it? The white kid, whatever his name is, he was Angulo's sparring partner.
Yeah, McEwen.
Yes.
That was probably his best sparring partner, from what I understand, you know. And to me, I just said, there's no way that you can really. I think they had another guy that was a southpaw, solid amateur guy. But the kind of pressure that James, it's a different kind of pressure. You know, Mexicans will pressure, but they'll get close. And so they're always right there making you move. But James didn't ever let Angulo rest. He didn't let him recover. He just kept throwing punches. I don't know how you simulate that.
Well, he was working everything too, from the body back to the head, back to the body. Like, he was not predictable at all. You know, you couldn't really time.
Everybody says the Mexican fights go to body. I say everybody that box should go to the body.
Right.
I'll go to your body. I'll go to your face. I told him if he bent his head down, hit him on top of the head. Hit him anywhere that he, if he in front of you, hit him anywhere he moves. And then did you see him? Angulo is an idiot. To me, he made an idiot move in the ring by going, tell the referee, hold on, I'm going to get my mouthpiece.
Yeah, I thought that was strange. It signaled to me that Nacho was panicking.
Right.
You know, that they didn't know what they were up against, and they were in the middle of chaos, and they lost their heads, and they forgot to put the mouthpiece.
I mean, I'm just saying, I'm not saying he's an idiot, but I'm like, you cannot stop in the middle of a fight.
Right.
We're not sparring. We're fighting. If James would have caught him and knocked him out, nobody could have said it.
Yeah.
Did hold on, and just turned and went to go get his mouthpiece, not telling the referee to call time. The referee is the only one that could stop the fight and call time.
Mm-hmm.
Not Angulo. What makes you think you can call time?
Well, it seemed to me, you know, when Angulo got up, and I watched it again last night, I've watched it a bunch of times, that first round, the ref seemed a little biased towards Angulo. I mean, granted, they're in his home country and everything. Did you get the sense that you guys were sent down there and they just expected to get...
We were sent down there to get our ass kicked. I'm going to tell you something. The referee counted for Angulo for a long time, but he also gave James a long time when Angulo was just firing off on him, even though James wasn't getting hit and never was hurt. So, to me, the only fairness that I got was from the referee. Because I didn't care about give him all the long time you want. You're going to be going to see him at the hospital. I like the referee. I like that. The referee let him, he was going to let it, because he showed fairness by allowing James him to keep punching. When Angulo was punching James, he didn't stop it.
Yeah.
You know, and he counted for James. He said, "You all right?" So whoever that referee is, I can say, to me, he was fair. He told me, he said, "I don't care where we at.
Right.
I'm going to be fair." All the rest of that shit that was going on, I can tell you, they was doing all kind of crazy shit. We never took a blood test. We never took a blood test. We never seen a doctor. The only thing the doctor did to us down there was give us a drug test that I had to pitch a fit about taking. They didn't check our blood pressure. They didn't check our eyes. They didn't check our face, nothing. We didn't see a doctor.
Wow.
At all.
Why do you think that was?
Because I think it's in Mexico, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
That's the craziest thing.
I'm serious. Before or after?
Uh-huh.
We never. We're getting a car to the train home. We never seen a doctor. Before or after.
That is crazy. I cannot believe that. Wow.
I promise you. I promise.
Wow.
I said, who's going to? I never went to a fight at the weigh-in and you don't see a doctor. And then after the fight, we didn't see a doctor. After the fight, he didn't check to see if this man's face was knocked off or,
right.
Angulo ended up going to the hospital. The doctor wouldn't have told him to go. I guess he just knew. And then I got the crap beat out of me and then go to the doctor. I know that somebody asked me a question as dumb as to say, would you? Well, if you want a rematch, tell him. I was like, oh, rematch?
Yeah, that's the thing. People call it fight of the year. You know, I even refer to it as a classic. But really, in a lot of ways, it reminded me of Hagler and Hearns.
Right.
In that we remember that first round and how great it was. But the rest of it was kind of mop-up duty.
Right.
For you, when was the fight over and you knew that James had it in full control?
After the second round. In the third round, I say, minute or third, I said, well, just take your time. Take your time. I said, and then like third round, I said, James, you're lulling into him. He's putting you to sleep with that slow ass shit.
That mouthpiece thing too that you were talking about, and to me, when I saw that happen, the first thing I thought was not just trying to buy him time. That was done on purpose. That's a veteran move. He knew his guy needed a second win because Angulo looked just completely out of it.
And if you go look at the first round, Angulo raised his hand like stop it, or I mean, right before he went down,
uh-huh.
He made this weird gesture like, go watch and see. And then let me tell you my favorite part. I go and look at all the crowd. I don't even watch the fight and watch their face go from smiles to crying.
It was silent. It was
silent.
Oh, my
God.
You know? It was almost the same silence that when Giovanni Segura went down to Puerto Rico to fight Alvin Calderon. That's the same thing you guys pretty much did. You shut the crowd up. I mean, it was silent.
I thought it was Tokyo, you know, when Tyson lost to Buster Douglas.
Yeah.
It was very, very quiet out there.
You can't. I mean, it was like also, I mean, I just can't. It just messed up everything. It was like the whole everything was just like crazy. It was like I was in a warp. I was like, get the hell out of here. But the local Hispanic people, I love them.
Mm-hmm.
I love them. They are solid boxing fans.
Yeah.
They don't care. You got your ass man, got your ass kicked.
Right.
They was taking pictures with us and everything. So I would say the average Hispanic person from Mexico believes in whoever fighting, whoever win. I don't give a damn what color your skin is. They like me. I don't care. I got Hispanic fighters.
Right.
I don't believe in that black, white, Hispanic, purple, green. I believe in whoever going to get in there and go and going to show that they got heart. I don't care what color you are. It ain't about a color to me. It's about whether you're going to get your ass in there and fight or not.
I think the style is universal. That's why, you know, I said today on the show and yesterday on Twitter and Saturday that, in my opinion, James is the most marketable fighter possibly in boxing right now. And I know people will say, well, what about Floyd Mayweather? But the style is universal. You watch it and you want to watch it again.
I've never got this many calls, this many emails, this many, with people saying I was on the floor, almost passed out. It brought back, you know what, I'm going to tell you this. This is how, when I watched it, the only time I felt like that was twice. When Vince Young ran that touchdown in with Texas for the Texas Longhorns, and I don't even watch football. When Serena Williams was trying to break a record.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know who she was playing against, and it was just like back and forth. And he was like, "Run," back and forth. And then it's just, but the one that's the most is when Vince Young ran that touchdown in for Texas to win.
Oh yeah.
It was that, like, can you do it? Can you get up? Can you finish? Can you, you know? And people was like, "Anna, I had a lady say, Ann, this is the closest I ever came to passing out. I was so emotional."
There's something about him, and you know, I wanted to go down to the fight and wasn't able to. And on a sense, you know, I'll be honest, I'm glad I wasn't on press row because I wouldn't have been able to remain silent. It was a moving experience watching that fight.
Nobody did. I mean, when he got dropped, it's like the crowd erupted.
Yeah.
I mean, and they really and Angulo showed me that he is not. He might be a professional, but if you think you punch yourself out, why would you just go all out and you're missing?
Right.
And you can't take, not your Berenstain should have told you to relax. And you see when James hurt him, he didn't go all crazy.
Right. No, he didn't. He stayed collective. He stayed very collective.
Time. Yes. He took his time and whooped his ass. And Gulo got all crazy. And James was supposed to be the wild man.
Right. Well, let's talk about this, the wild man, and after the fight, you know, and Canelo's the other guy in the Golden Boy banner. Has Golden Boy, after you guys knocking out Angulo, have they mentioned anything of a possible fight or possible fights with some top-ranked fighters like Pollock or Mataroshian or even Sergio Martinez?
When they told me, they said, you are fighting for the number one spot to fight Sergio, to fight Camelo.
Oh.
So I don't want to hear that shit. That's what y'all told me. That's why I went and did all of what I did and took those type of chances or whatever. But if they don't want to give him those, and then they were like, I said, we're supposed to fight for the number one spot. So they said, well, he might, the Bella Hoya them didn't, but I heard, well, he might go up to 160 and fight
Chavez.
Right.
I was like, okay, it don't matter because they don't have to meet. And then I heard that Saul called and was like, I'll fight him. I'll say, okay, you're going to come to America too.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'd heard that immediately after they were calling out both Angulo and Kirkland and said they could beat him on the same day. Obviously, that's not going to happen, you know, even if they fight just one of them, you know, maybe Angulo, but I just think
the kid's not ready. Saul, the problems he let me tell you something. I seen something in Saul. I'm never said we'll beat Angulo, but Saul's gonna have more hell than he ever think he had in his life. And he's gonna get hit with some of that thunder coming from the left side. I just don't understand. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm not gonna sit and say I ain't never said nowhere said we could beat no one. That you're going to catch more hell than you ever imagined in your life. Ever.
I don't see him working that shoulder roll against James. I just don't think it's going to work. I mean, he hasn't faced anybody. You know, Matthew Hatton and Ryan Rhodes are not James Kirkland. You know, and maybe he can drop him early, but we kind of see what happens when that goes down, when you're in the corner.
What about but in order to drop him, in order to drop him, you got to get close to him.
Right.
So that don't always happen.
Now, what about, you know, maybe a different route if they're going to kind of protect Canelo? Because, you know, it was interesting, about 3 weeks, 4 weeks out from the fight, on Twitter, Jose Suleiman randomly tweeted at me, just so you know, this fight isn't for the number one spot. It's a semifinal. And that right there told me, you know, who he thought might win and that they were going to put it, you know, I don't consider Canelo's belt a belt. It's more like a shield at this point.
I don't even care. I just want to, yeah, nothing
like
that.
What about Bundridge or somebody like that?
I think,
you know?
they called his name up to us. I didn't have two or three people say his name.
What do you think about a K-9 Bundridge or one of the other title holders? Do you think it's time for James to go get a belt?
Yes, it is. Well, you know, it is. Give him, pay the kid. Get the kid, you know what I'm saying, give him a chance. I'm not saying we could beat all the people they're calling out or we can beat them or this. I just say we deserve a chance and let us see what we can do. But whoever we fight, better go bring your A-game.
You think with the motivation that he had with that Ishida fight, you think you can get back to this well, dig into this well again, and get him to be as inspired as he was?
Oh, for anybody? Oh, you know, I don't care about no Ishida. I really don't give. I don't care about Ngulo no more because he already got beat. I don't care about all the past fights he had, Alan Cunha. I care about who we finna fight, and that should be your motivation right there. That man can knock you on your ass. So what other motivation do you need?
Fair point.
Whoever you're going to fight can knock you on your ass and take everything you got from you.
Do you have an interest in going after Ishida for that rematch, just so that people will stop saying, yeah, but what about Ishida?
If we get paid the same amount of money, why? You know, if you go back and look at any other interview I've ever done, I said if we fight Ishida after he beat a couple of people and we go and get a big fight and win, why should we? I want the Ishida right now. I want the Ishida yesterday, it's Saturday. I want the Ishida when we fought the second time. And for whatever reason, they didn't make it. So I said, we're not going to go out and fight no big people, and Ishida hadn't even fought no one, and fight him again for what?
That's a fair point.
I asked for him. I said, give us Ishida. If he don't even have to beat two or three more people. Give him us right off the bat. Him and us. If she wants to say, I don't want to fight James Kirkland, then ain't nothing we can do. Now that we done went beat Angulo, what the hell we need to beat Ishida for?
Right.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. I definitely think so, too.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. What the hell we need to beat him for? Unless they're going to pay us the same amount of money they would pay us to fight a Carlos Brundage or a top guy, and I don't see that happening.
Right.
So why would we do that? And I told him, give me Ishida Saturday night. Or give me Ishida, you know what I'm saying? That's when I asked for Ishida. I asked for Ishida, then Angulo. They were like, no. I was like, all right. We beat Angulo. Come up here with know that Ishida shit. And not taking nothing from Ishida, but it's politics.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
They're not going to pay us the same amount of money to fight Ishida as they is to fight Saul or to fight somebody with a belt.
Well, and it's interesting that Canelo actually promotes Ishida. So I kind of wonder if they were holding that card when you if you won this fight. They told me that
Golden Boy picked up Ishida.
You know, it's these kind of boutique promotional companies, or you know, Canelo Promotions or Floyd Mayweather Promotions. They're not really promotional companies, but they let the kid have a toy. And
man, they can't hold nothing against me. I'm not going to, now it's time, you know what I'm saying? Canelo ain't nothing but a freaking kid. You think I'm going to let a kid tell, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
yeah.
Either you're going to fight or go sit your ass down.
What about Sergio Martinez? I mean, he's at 160.
Right now out of all those names you named, that's the one I have the most respect for. Uh-huh. And James Lee fights before he fight him because of the movement. James needs more fight. Now, you talking about a solid fighter.
Right.
Sergio Martinez is a solid fighter. He ain't no bullshit. I've been doing this for a long time. He ain't no, you know what I'm saying? And it's not that he's just rough, tough. He got good movement. He got good confidence. He's an older man and know what he is, know what he's doing.
That's the key. He knows exactly who he is. And that's when a guy knows what he can do. and what he can't do, that's when he's a problem.
Yeah, and Jack, what I say is, like, we will fight Sergio Martinez, but that's the type of fight you need to give James 3-4 good fights before you take on something like that.
I agree. It wouldn't throw him right in there. You let him, you know, like, I think when we first did that interview a long time ago, when James was still in, and you said, let him feast on some rabbit for a while, then you give him some elk. You know, you kind of let him build up a little bit.
Right.
And then you give him a bear, you know, and I think you're exactly right on that.
And he'll fight anybody, but you don't, you know what I'm saying, you don't, that type of fight, he's going to move, you know what I'm saying? He's not going to shoot as wide like Angulo did. He's an older man that understands he's in the prime of his strength, prime of everything. So James needs to get hot, like history, so he, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. He's barely on a roll right now. You know, he had a few easy ones, and now this one. It's
yeah,
time
you go
to
look at Camilo. I mean, you go look at Sergio Martinez. Once he got on the roll, he had the draw with Citron. Then he had the little crazy thing with Paul Williams. And once he got on that roll, he was unstoppable.
Have they talked about when is next, or are you guys just enjoying the moment right now?
No, we just waiting. We know, I don't, ain't no moment for me to enjoy. I'm like, shit, James, you go be so a couple of weeks, and, hey, we ready to fight. His body does well when it stays in that, you know, I like to keep him about 60%, 70%, 80%. Then he don't have to do as much work.
Right. You're just right back in rhythm, and the weight comes right off. James said you guys did something different there, too, that you changed his diet and the weight came off much easier than ever before.
Because, it's not that I changed his diet, you got to realize James was sitting in prison and he was 210 pounds. So when he came to me for this fight, he's 185, 190. You got to change the diet. Usually we fight so much because he never goes over 70. So when he's coming to me, I have, okay, you usually come to spring camp at 70, 72. You coming in at 90. I have an extra 15 pounds to deal with that I'm not used to even dealing with. So, of course, you got to diet, get on a diet now because you got to work the weight off of that.
Right.
But you can't just work it off. You got to be smart and say, you know what, he's 15 pounds, he's older, he done been in jail, he done been sitting down, ain't nobody been banging on him, hitting on him. So I got to beat all his muscles and start, you know, we never really worked our neck a lot. Certain stuff I had to go back and rebuild back up. Because it hadn't been worked for years.
Well, I think we're all questioned out.
Yeah.
I think we could talk to you for about 2-3 hours, but you know, I don't want to take any more of your time. I thank you so much for coming on, and so happy for you guys.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I just ask to everybody, you know, I just keep it real and just let us do what we do, and we appreciate y'all at least believing in us because nobody else needs it.
Well, there you go, fight fans. Here's a few folks that are not able to hear the entire interview because it stopped on them. Anyways, so we're going to post it up. Give me a few minutes, and we should have it up on the Leaving the Ring site so that you can check it out and listen to the entire interview. Other than that, have a good night. Have a good Saturday night. Don't drink and drive. Gable?
Yep. If you're in Vegas, I'll see you there. And good show as always, Dave. Always a pleasure. And I'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Always fun, man. Always fun. Take care.